Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Thank you.
कुंज विहारी
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna.
പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ അഭയചരണാരവിന്ദ ഭക്തിവേദാന്ത ഗോസ്വാമി മഹാരാശിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് ജയോ നിത്യലീല പ്രവിഷ്ടോം വിഷ്ണുപാദ പരമഹംസ പരിവ്രജകാചാര്യ അഷ്ടോത്തര ശതശ്രീ ശ്രീമാൻ ഭക്തിസിദ്ധാന്ത സരസ്വതി മഹാരാശിയിലെ പ്രഭുപാദിക്ക് അനന്തകോടി വൈഷ്ണവ വൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് നാമാചാര്യ ശ്ലഹരിദാസ് ടാക്കൂർക്ക് പ്രേം സഹോ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ശ്രീ ശ്രീ രാധാകൃഷ്ണ ഗോപഗോപിനാഥ ശ്യാമകുണ്ട് രാധാകുണ്ട് ഗിരിഗോവർധാമിക്ക് വൃന്ദാവൻ ധാമിക്ക് മായപ്പൂർ ധാമിക്ക് മധുരപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ജഗന്നാഥ്പുരി ധാമിക്ക് ദ്വാരകാപുരി ധാമിക്ക് ഗംഗമായിക്ക് യമുനമായിക്ക് തുളസിദേവിക്ക് ഭക്തിദേവിക്ക് സമവേദ ഭക്തവൃന്ദയ്ക്ക് ഗൗർ പ്രേമനന്ദി ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ദി അസംബ്ലി ഡിവോട്ടീസ് ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ശ്രീ ശ്രീ ഗുരു ആൻഡ് ശ്രീ ഗൗരംഗ ഓൾ ഗ്ലോറീസ് ടു ശ്രീ പ്രഭുപാദ നമോ വിഷ്ണുപദായ കൃഷ്ണപ്രസ്ഥായ ഭൂതലേശ്വരി ഭക്തിവേദാന്തസ്വാമി നാമിനെ നമസ്തേ സരസ്വദേവം ഗൗരവാണി പ്രജാലിനി നിർവിശേഷ ശൂന്യവാദി പാശ്ചാത്യദേശധാരിണി ഓം അജ്ഞാനതിമിരാന്ധസ്യ ജ്ഞാനാഞ്ജനശലാകയ ചക്ഷുന്മിലിതാം യേന തസ്മൈ ശ്രീ ഗുരവേ നമഃ ശ്രീചൈതന്യമനോഭീഷ്ടം സവിധം യേന ഭൂതലേ സ്വയം രൂപകതാ മഹ്യം ദദാതിം സ്വപദാന്തികം വന്ദേഹം ശ്രീഗുരു ശ്രീയുതാപദകമലം ശ്രീഗുരും വൈഷ്ണവാംശ്ച ശ്രീരൂപം സാഗ്രജാതം സഹഗണരഘുനാഥാൻവിതം തം സജീവം സാദ്വൈതം സാവധൂതം പരിജനാസഹിതം കൃഷ്ണചൈതന്യദേവം ശ്രീരാധാകൃഷ്ണപദം സഹഗണലളിതാം ശ്രീവിശാഖാൻവിതാംശ്ച ഹേ കൃഷ്ണകരുണാ സിന്ധു ദീനബന്ധോ ജഗൽപദേ ഗോപേശ ഗോപികാ കാന്ത രാധാകാന്ത നമോസ്തുതേ തപ്തകാഞ്ചന ഗൗരാംഗീ രാധേ വൃന്ദാവനേശ്വരി വൃഷഭാനുസുതേ ദേവി പ്രണമാമി ഹരിപ്രിയേ വാഞ്ചകൽപതരുഭ്യശ്ച കൃപാസിന്ധൂഭ്യ ഏവ ച പതിതാനാം ഭാവനേഭ്യോ വൈഷ്ണവേഭ്യോ നമോ നമഃ ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണ ചൈതന്യ പ്രഭു നിത്യാനന്ദ ശ്രീ അദ്വൈത ഗദാധാര ശ്രീവാസാദി ഗൗരഭക്തവൃന്ദ ഹരേ കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ ഹരേ രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ 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 കൃഷ്ണ 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 ഹരേ 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 രാമ 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 ഹരേ ഹരേ ഓം പാർത്ഥായ പ്രതിബോധിതാം ഭഗവതാം നാരായണേന സ്വയം വ്യാസേന ഗ്രഥിതാം പുരാണമുനിനാം മധ്യേ മഹാഭാരതം അദ്വൈതാമൃതവർഷിണിം ഭഗവതിം അഷ്ടാദശാധ്യായിനിം അംബത്വാമനുസന്ധദാമി ഭഗവത്ഗീതേ ഭവദ്വേഷിണിം നമോസ്തുതേ വ്യാസവിശാലബുദ്ധേ പുല്ലാരവിന്ദായതപത്രനേത്രാം യേന ത്വയാ ഭാരതതൈലപൂർണം പ്രജ്വാലിതോ ജ്ഞാനമയ പ്രദീപാഹം പ്രപന്ന പാരിജാതായ തോത്രവേത്രൈകബാണയെ ജ്ഞാനമുദ്രായ കൃഷ്ണായ ഗീതാമൃതദുഹേ നമാം സർവോപനിഷദോ ഗാവോ ദുഗ്ധാ ഗോപാലനന്ദന പാർത്ഥോ വത്സസുധീർഭോക്ത ദുഗ്ധം ഗീതാമൃതം മഹത് വസുദേവസുതം ദൈവം കംസചാനൂരമർദനം ദേവകീ പരമാനന്ദം കൃഷ്ണം വന്ദേ ജഗദ്ഗുരും ഭീഷ്മദ്രോണതടാ ജയദ്രഥജല ഗാന്ധാര്യനീലോൽപല ശല്യഗ്രാഹവതീ കൃപേണ വഹനി കർണേന വേലാകുലാം അശ്വത്ഥാമാ വികർണഘോരമകര ദുര്യോധനാവർത്തിനി സോത്തീർണ ഖലു പാണ്ഡവൈരണനദീ കൈവർത്തക കേശവാം പാരാശര്യവചസ്സരോജമലം ഗീതാർത്ഥഗന്ധോൽക്കലം നാനാഖ്യാനക കേസരം ഹരികഥ സംബോധനാബോധിതം ലോകൈ സജ്ജനഷൽപദൈരഹരഃ പേവീയമാനം മുദാ ഭൂയാദ്ഭാരത പങ്കജ കലിമല പ്രധ്വംസിന ശ്രേയസേ മൂകം കരോതി വാചാലം പങ്കും ലംഘയതേ ഗിരിം യൽകൃപാതമഹം വന്ദേ പരമാനന്ദമാധവം യം ബ്രഹ്മാവരുണേന്ദ്രരുദ്രമരുത സ്വന്വന്തി ദിവ്യൈ സ്തവേ വേദൈ സംഗപദൈർ ക്രമോപനിഷദൈർ ഗായന്തി യം സമഗാഃ ധ്യാനാവസ്ഥിത തദ്ഗതേന മനസാ പശ്യന്തി യം യോഗിനോ യസ്യാന്തം ന വിദുസുരാസുരഗണൈ ദേവായ തസ്മൈ നമ ഓം ശ്രീകൃഷ്ണായ നമ ശ്രീമതി രാധികായേ നമ സർവത്ര ഗോവിന്ദ നാമ സങ്കീർത്തനം ഗോവിന്ദ ഗോവിന്ദ So, we will continue from where we stopped last time. That was in the chapter 16, verse 20. That was the last verse we discussed here. So, Krishna was talking about the very important chapter, Divine and the Demonic Nature, isn't it? That's where we were, Divine and the Demonic Nature. So, we saw there that Krishna says, Asurim yonima bhannam mude janmani janmani. Krishna says, ma prapeva kaundaya tado yanti adhamam gadim. That was the verse we discussed. Now, up to this point in this chapter, starting from the verse number, if you look at the verse number 7. From 7 to this verse, which is now 20. These 13 verses in this chapter, Krishna has devoted to discuss about the demoniac nature. Krishna said in the beginning, in a few verses about the divine qualities, but took a long number of verses to discuss this demoniac nature. That is, and it finishes here. It is verse 20. It finishes the demoniac nature. What is interesting here is, Krishna says, Asurim yoni mahapannam muda janmani janmani. Life after life, janmani janmani means life after life. Such people who have developed this demonic propensities, Krishna says, maam aprapeva kaundeya tato yanti adhamam gadim. Adhamam gadi means their journey is downwards, not upwards. They'll start going downwards. And so that is why in spiritual life one has to be careful not to go in that route at all and not fall into that situation where one continuously slides down. Sometimes people think that we keep spiritual life for the old age and we will, till then, we will play this material life very well. It is, examples are there in the Bhagavatam also when we discuss. But what happens is, if you read the ninth canto of Bhagavatam, you will find all those great personalities who appeared in the solar dynasty and lunar dynasty, they played their material game very well. They never were not short of anything in material life. But they all had that great strength at the right time to leave it and get to spiritual life before leaving this body. We also play the material side very well. But when it comes to spiritual side, we lose there. That's what happens to the most of the society in the world. That is why they were called Rajarshis and we are ordinary conditioned souls because of this. That this one important point Bhagavatam points out to us, that if ever you are caught up in the material life, at least develop this thinking that at some point in time one has to able to come out of it and take to spiritual life very seriously before leaving this body. And that was the success of all those great kings whom we discussed in the, so many of them, Mandhada, Dushyanta, Ikshvaku, and all that solar dynasty kings, including Pururavas, the beginning of the Pururavas story. If you discuss in the Bhagavatam, how much Pururavas was engaged in spirit, in the sense gratification. But at the right moment, he was able to give it up and come to spiritual life very seriously. And that was his success. And Krishna glorifies him for that. In the Bhagavadam you will see Krishna glorifying Pururavas, that such an intelligent king, he says. And he is the personality from whom the lunar dynasty begins. So they all did that, and here Krishna is reminding us again that once you start sliding downwards in that route, asuric nature, then the chances of coming back, it's probably going to take a very, very long time to come out of that. That is what Krishna is pointing out. Just like in the during the revolution periods in Russia, we hear so many interesting things happen at that time. People were in great difficulties, and our nature, by and large, by the human nature, is to get attached to the material world strongly and feel happiness and shelter in this world. Although one day they have to leave everything and go from here, but they are not able to take to that. So it seems in one instance when what happened was that Stalin went around asking people to help their the regime at that time. So they said to him that he said to one of the farmers who was showing compassion towards him for the regime, but says to him that, what's your attitude towards the government? So in those days, we hadn't had this democratic system of government. A lot of things was dependent on the dictators who ruled. So when he asked this question, he said to them that if you have four cows, what will you do? He said, I'll give two to the state, he said. Half of it to the state. He was willing to offer it to the state. And, okay, if you have four goats, what will you do? He said, I'll give half of it to the state, he said. The farmer said like this. Then he asked this question, that if you have four ducks, what are you going to do? He said, I won't give anything from that, he said. So Stalin said, why? Why is it like that? He said, because I have got it, that's why. Whereas the other thing I didn't have. So this is our nature. In this world, we also tend to have this nature. We don't want to give it to Krishna, we want to keep it to ourselves. And we don't want to feel that Krishna is a proprietor. Ishavasam idam sarvam. Why? Sages have stressed this point so strongly. Ishavasam idam sarvam tena tiktvena bunjidaha. That take it what is needed and give that back to Krishna, whatever Krishna's property is. That magrida kasasiddhanam. That always remember to whom it belongs to. It says, Upanishad says like this, always remember to whom it belongs to. Now, in the Bhagavad Gita, from now on, there are 3-4 verses to close this chapter. Basically, what Krishna is saying here now, in this chapter is, that he makes a summary of all these 13 verses, depending on the demoniac nature, what we have discussed. And, in summary, Krishna says, this demoniac nature originates from 3 things. They originate from 3 things. And those 3 things, Krishna is going to now discuss in the remaining verses. What are those 3 things and how from them originate all the other demoniac nature. That is what is in the next few verses. So if you look into Bhagavad Gita, you will see there that the Krishna says, Hey Kaundeya, that is his verse number 20. Krishna says, Hey Kaundeya, te chamudha janmani janmani asurim yonim apannaha mam aprapya eva tadaha adhamam gadim yandi. Other words, my dear son of Kunti Devi, those foolish people, life after life, they develop that demonic nature and approach at acquiring that nature, they will not reach me. And not only that, they may go down to the lower species, particularly the trees and plants, and their life is very difficult afterwards. Krishna said like that. But all these asuric nature, Krishna has summarized in the next 3 verses. Next 3 verses. So let's look at that. 21. Trividam naragasedam dvaram nashanam atmanaha Kama krodha tatha loba tasmadeda trayam tejel. Krishna says, Trividam naragasedam dvaram nashanam altmana. In other words, Krishna says, there are 3 gates to hell. There are 3 gates to hell. And there is only 1 gate to the heaven. That's also important. There are 3 gates, but the difference is, The three gates are left open all the time. There's one gate is always closed. There's a little difference there. Why it is like that is, Trividam Naragasedam Dwaram Nashanam Atmana, Krishna says, Kamaha Krodaha Tatha Lobaha. That means Kamam, lust, Krodaha, anger, and Lobaha, greed. These three things, Krishna says, that Idam Trividham, these three things, Naragasya Dwaram, they are the gateways to the hell. Adaha Eva Almanaha Nashanam Tasmal Edatrayam Tejel. Those things are meant for destroying the soul. Krishna says they will destroy the soul. What does destroy the soul mean? Not that soul is going to be disappearing. Soul will still survive, but what will happen to the soul? That's what Krishna is saying. Almanaha Nashanam. It will happen, the death of the soul. Tasmal Edatrayam Tejel. So, now, this three gateways to hell, Krishna talks about, these three gateways to the hell, they are important because the when the living entity lives a life without caring about its own spiritual life, without caring for spiritual life, it will continuously slip into this hellish situation. You can never say when you will slip into that condition. One thing. Which are they? Kamam, Krodham and Lobham. Lust, anger and greed. These are those three gateways, Krishna says. Then, in order that we don't get driven into the hellish conditions, Krishna says you should be careful about these three gates. Then, there is not so much crowd for these three gates. That's the interesting thing. There is not very crowded because there are three gates to enter. So there is not very crowded either. The other gate is very crowded and it's also closed as well. The gateway to the heaven. So Krishna says, from this you have to understand, where is this hell and heaven? Hell and heaven, it is not something, it will happen only after death. Many people have this understanding that hell and heaven is after death. Previously we discussed in another verse, we mentioned that hell and heaven, what Krishna's definition in the Bhagavatam also is like this. That Naragastama Unnaham, once you fall into Tamogunam, that itself is hell. There is nothing else needed after that. Just falling into Tamogunam is enough to be in hellish condition. Similarly, Sattvam Sargagunadeya, once you have come to mode of goodness, you are already in heaven. We may wonder why it is like that. Because these two modes of nature, Sattvam and Tamas, they will more or less decide your journey back to home, back to Krishna. That is already decided by that. That Sattvam Sarga Gunadeya, Krishna says in the Bhagavadam, is already, if you are in Sattvagunam, you are in Sorgam, because you are properly situated. That's more important. Whereas Naragas Tama Unnaham, if you are in Tamogunam, you are in Naragam, in hell. There's no question. So we don't have to think, oh, it's only after death I'll have to go, I'll have to decide where to go, where I'll go. No, it's already here. And we can see that Tamogunam, once it captures people, when we are controlled by Tamogunam, all our activities will also be like that. We will discuss that in the next verse, in the next chapter in detail, because Shraddhatraya Vibhagyogam, which follows this chapter, is nothing but an expansion of these things in a different way. So Krishna says here that the that what is the nature, what is the situation in a person in Tamogunam? The person's nature in Tamogunam is, he does not inquire about his own identity. That is the meaning of this Tamogunam means. Tamogunam means completely absorbed in the body, trying to enjoy the body, engaging in adharmic activities, religious activities, and forgetting about his own identity. That's enough. That's Tamogunam. So when one is inquiring his true identity, Surubam as it is called, then he is in Satugunam. He is in Satugunam. And therefore, in the Bhagavadam, Krishna says, Sattvik Adhyalpigi Shraddha. Adhyatma Shraddha. Adhyatma means spiritual life. When one Shraddha is in Adhyatma, in spiritual life, he is situated in Satugunam, as far as Krishna is concerned. Then, Karmam Shraddha Turyajasi. When one is very heavily absorbed in working in this world, in karmam, in activities, one after the other, with a desire to acquire wealth and to enjoy life, this, that and the other, he is supposed to be in Rajogunam. There is no question. He says, the only way you can differentiate a person in Satvagunam is his Shraddha is in Adhyatmam, in spiritual life. That is the precise definition Krishna gives for a person who is in Samogunam, Rajogunam and Satvagunam. And what about the Tamogunam? Tamogunam's nature is very simple. Krishna explains that. He says, Tamogunam adharmic life. That is Samogunam. Adharming Tamoguna Shraddha, he says. So, Sattvam, Sattvagunam is predominating when your Shraddha is in spiritual life. That is the proof of that. If somebody asks, one is engaged in spiritual life, one is in Sattvagunam or not, the measuring rod is to see how much Shraddha he has in spiritual life, seriousness in spiritual life. And then from there you can see all his activities will be based on that. Otherwise not. So, Satyamadhyalpigi Shraddha, Karma Shraddha to Rajasi. The Josic nature is in karmam, working, earning, enjoying. This is the philosophy there. But Adhyatma Shraddha is important. That is why Krishna gives a lot of stress to that. Now, one thing what we have to remember is this here, that then once it so happened that someone was dying. So it's normally a custom, isn't it? People go to pray for him at the time of death. So a priest was asked to go there to help pray for that soul who was going to leave the body. So the priest was going, he asked some other people also to join the prayer. So some few other people joined him and they were all traveling together to the person where he was dying. So in that group who were going, there were a couple of them who were not very serious about spiritual life or anything. Rather, they were more interested in... they were burglars, basically. They used to burgle houses and do all sorts of things to acquire wealth. So somebody noticed that there were these two people in the group going along with the priest for the prayers. So he says to the... priest, don't take those two who are going with you. They are not very good people because they always do burglaries and all kinds of things which are not proper. The priest said to them that as far as I know, let them also come. Because when we get there, at least they can break open the door for the heaven, he said. At least that benefit will be there if they can come with us. This is the way he put it to them. So in other words, Trividam Naragasyedam Dwaram Nashanam Almanaha. Kama Krodha Tada Loba Tasmad Eva Trayam Trejed. Krishna says, you have to get out of these three gates. Which are they? Kamam, Krodham and Lobham. Kamam, Krodham and Lobham. If you remember, if you study Srimad Bhagavatam, you will find there are certain interesting things. Bhagavatam talks about three things. What are they? Bhakti, Jnanam and Vairagyam. Isn't it? Bhakti, Jnanam and Vairagyam. This is Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is nothing but these three things. Bhakti, Jnanam, Vairagyam. Throughout Bhagavatam from beginning to end, Sukadeva Goswami talks about this one thing. In different ways it is expressed and presented there. Why these three things? Just like here you find for heaven, these for hell, kamam, krotham and lobham. For heaven, those are the three things. Which are the bhakti, jnanam and vairagyam. Why they are important? They are important because vairagyam takes a person, frees a person from material existence. From material existence he gets released if he has developed Vairagyam. Otherwise there is no way getting out of this material existence. He can keep singing the prayer, Samsara Dhava Nanaleda Loga. Samsaram is material existence. You may sing whole lifetime, but if Vairagyam is not there, you are not going to get yourself released from Samsaram. Praying to the spiritual master, if you remember, samsara dhavan analitha loga tranaya karunya kanaganatvam. Why we pray like this? Because samsaram is the one that is actually burning everyone's heart in this world because of our absorption in the material existence. So that is where vairagyam is stressed. Vairagyam means released from the material existence. Similarly, why jnanam is stressed? Jnanam is stressed because jnanam is ultimately gives the perception of the truth. What is the true nature of the soul?
Vastunishtam it is called. Vastunishtam means to know the truth, to know the substance. The substance is the soul. That's what we are looking for, isn't it? Our whole effort in spiritual life is to realize the thing called self, which is spirit soul. So this realization of the self is the knowledge, is what is supported by the knowledge. Knowledge brings that, the perception of the truth, the self. At the moment we have no perception of the truth, we have perception of our false identity of the material body. But when we want to move on to the true perception of the truth, which is knowledge, which is based on the knowledge. So jnanam is required for that. And then finally, bhakti. Bhakti is for what? Bhakti is the one that purifies our consciousness. Through devotion we get purified, manashuddhi, as it's referred to. So the purification happens from devotion. When pure devotion develops in the heart, a person becomes purified, and from that develops the jnana vairagyam will come in a natural way for that person. By bhakti everything is possible. So just like kamam, krotham and lobham is discussed here, in Bhagavadam it discusses about bhakti, jnanam and vairagyam. So that is what Krishna is saying here. Truvidam naraga seidam dvaram nashanam atmanaha kama krodha tatha alobal tasma devatayam evatrayam tijel. Krishna says all these three things has to be given up at some point or the other for advancing in the spiritual life. Then edair vimukta kaundeya tamo dvare stribhir naraha ajaratyatmana shreyastato yadiparangadim. Verse 22. Krishna says, Eder Vimukta Kaundaya Tamodware Tribirnara Ajarat Yalpana Shraya Tado Yadi Varangadim. Arjuna, Krishna says, one who has won over these three things, Kamam, Krodham and Lobham, only such a person can do something good in this world. That's another important point. Because one who is influenced by lust, what can he think about what is auspicious for the world? He will not even get an opportunity for that. Not only that, one who has won over these three things, kamam, krodham and lobham, he will have nothing else to do except to see, do what is necessary for the soul. He will only function in this world for the benefit of the soul. Otherwise, nothing else he has got to do here. And because this lust, anger and greed grows considerably in a person's life, the asuric samskar or the demoniac culture develops in a person and he cannot think anything in his life except what is suitable for his own sense gratification. That is the reason that it is said that one should immediately give up these three things, kamam, krodham and lobham, and engage in activities for his own welfare, ultimate welfare. So that is what Krishna has spoken there in that verse. If you remember that Rathakalpana means when we discussed about the chariot. If you remember that chariot, what did Krishna say there? Krishna, in the Upanishads, the statement is Dushta Shwam Ivasarathe, that if you do not control these three things, lust, anger, and greed, what will happen is that horses will drive the chariot and it will topple at the end. That means the chariot will go and topple at the end. Dushta ashwam ivasarathe. There, that ashwams or the horses are considered to be the horses, isn't it? The horses are considered to be the senses. And the horses are considered to be the senses. And that horses, if it's not allowed to control itself, what will happen is kamam, krodham and lobham will develop in a person. And the result of that is he will eventually get lost in this life. The whole lifetime is wasted. That's what Krishna was trying to point out there. Then idam trividam naragasya dvaram adaha eva almanaha nashanam tasma ledatrayam tejel. Krishna says. Then in the next verse, he kaundeya tamodvarehi edehi tribihi vimuktaha naraha almanaha shreyaha acharati tadaha parangadim yati. Now, here, in this verse, Krishna says there, Eder Vimukta Kaundaya Tamodvare Sribirnara. Krishna says, one who has managed to escape from these three gates, which are the Kamam, Krodham and Lobham, Acharati Atmana Shreyaha, Tato yadi parangadim. Because he has come to the right path and is situated in the proper path, there is a possibility for him to get released from the cycle of birth and death. That is what Krishna is saying in that particular verse. Edar vimukta kaundeya tamodvare sribirnarya acharati acharyati atmanashraya. Because he knows what is the ultimate welfare thing for him to do in this world, and he is acting on the right platform, therefore tado yadi parangadim, his destination is auspicious. Krishna says his destination is auspicious. So by explaining like this, Krishna is pointing out to us that if you do not take my instruction seriously, Krishna's instruction seriously, you will be lost in this world. Anyone who do not consult the Bhagavad Gita and follow the instructions of Krishna, the possibility is that he is on a mental platform. He is acting on a mental platform, which means that the chances are that he will be lost in this world. He has no proper destination, final destination. He does not know where he is going. And as soon as Krishna has spoken this verse, immediately Krishna wanted to bring out one important point there, that Shastram is the authority in everything. Shastram is the authority in everything. If the authority of Shastram is not accepted, Krishna says, then you are lost. Then you are lost there. And that is why in the very next two verses, Krishna is stressing that point very, very strongly. The necessity to consult Shastram. Probably most of the people think Shastram is another another window to look through and see what is Shastram written. No, Acharyas never took Shastram like that. Acharya's faith in the Shastram and their authority of the Shastram was such that they will not accept anything which is not accepted by the Shastram. That is how strongly they were fixed up in the Shastram. We are on the other hand, our mind is always thinking we should check Shastram is correct or not, isn't it? And that is where the problem has started. In the next two verses you will see that how the human society, when it has rejected the authority of the Shastram, due to the influence of the science and due to the influence of the independent thinking, how the whole human society has completely lost its goal. It has completely lost its goal. And that has happened in the last couple of generations particularly. With the advancement of science and technology, and also with the advancement of the modern education, many people have developed a nature that Shastram, what is Shastram? After all, it's also spoken by one human being. That's how they take it very often. And they want to verify, is this Shastram is all correct? Krishna is saying here that if you do not understand Shastram, if you do not accept Shastram, if you want to get out of these three things, what he spoke about, which are the lust, anger and greed, kamam, krotham and lobham, Krishna says, you have no other choice except to take the shelter of Shastram. Shastram is the only way, only through Shastram you can come out of this. That is why, immediately after talking about these three things, kamam, krotham and lobham, Krishna talked about Shastram straight away, about the authority of the Shastram, about the authority of the Vedic literature. Ya Shastram idimul srijya vartade kamakaryadaha masasiddhim avapnodi nasukham naparam gadim. Very, very precise reference to it. Krishna says, Yaha, whoever, Shastravidhim, Shastravidhi means instruction from the Shastram. Ulsrajya, one who gives it up and thinks that he can act in the kamakarataha, that means independently, at his own whim. If he acts in that way, Vartade, if he works like that, Saha, such a person, Siddhim, he will never make it. Krishna says he will never make it. Na avapnoti. Because na sukham. He will never be peaceful in his life. Not only he will ultimate goal also he won't attain. In other words, if somebody is thinking that they can take to spiritual life or they can take to a transcendental way of life without the consulting Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is making it very clear here that it will not happen. It will not happen. Our guidelines in these things is Shastram. Normally, Prabhupada used to explain this. Shastram, Sadhu, Shastram and Guru. Isn't it? Sadhu, Shastram and Guru. Even out of those three things, Shastram is predominating. Why? Because Guru And sadhu also is dependent on the shastram. Shastram has come from Krishna. Therefore, shastram decides everything. It is the knowledge of the shastras that makes a person a guru. It is the knowledge of the shastram and the practice of it that makes someone a sadhu. Otherwise, he is not a sadhu. Shastram creates guru. Shastram creates sadhu also. So, shastram's authority is total in all aspects. And that Krishna has put very firmly in these two verses for us to understand that do not overstep shastram. Ya shastram vidhimudsrajya. If ever one gives up shastram, vartade kamakaragat. He is only living, doing things based on his lust, nothing else. Because everyone has lust in his body, anger in his body, and desires in this body, anger in the body. These are all what we have got with us, in us, isn't it? So those things, if we act based on that, Krishna says you are lost. So in order that one has to progress in the spiritual path, it is necessary to study Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srimad Bhagavad Gita is making this point very clear to Arjuna, because Arjuna also in the beginning were not taking anything seriously from the shastric side. He was going according to his mind. But now Krishna has decided to tell him very openly that unless you take shelter of shastram, you also will be lost. That's why it's saying that. Ya shastra vidimul srajyam vartade kamakaragal, then nasa siddhim avapnodi nasokham naparam gadim. He is not going to be happy in this world. What to talk about his destination in the future? That's what Krishna is saying. Na sukham na parangadim ya shastra vidimul srajya vartade kamakaragal na sa siddhim avapnodi na sukham na parangadim. Why is it like that? Because na sa siddhim avapnodi, he is not going to be perfect. If someone is guided by false knowledge or false instructions, what is going to happen to him? That person will get lost at the end, isn't it? He will live a life based on falsity, on false understanding, false things. And in this world, there are many people who can preach these different kinds of things and mislead others also. So in that process, you will get misled if you do not consult shastram. And the result will be, when one is lost like that, nasa siddhim avapnodi, he is never going to be perfect, Krishna says, and na sukham na param gadim. He will never be happy, and at the end he will lament about everything what has happened in his life, and his final destination will also be very, very unhappy. He will not going to make it. Krishna says like that. So, the importance of shastram Krishna has pointed out there. He is feeling very important that shastram is accepted. The success of the previous generations were that they were able to accept shastram. The misfortune of the current generation is that they are unable to accept the shastram. And that is where our difficulties have started in spiritual life. When we go into the next chapter, you will see this, how it comes back again, that the lack of faith in the shastram, lack of faith in Krishna's words, lack of faith in the authorities, particularly Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, will create difficulties for us in spiritual life. Everything else is fine. People do so many things. They go to different places, going on pilgrimages. All those things are fine. But if the spiritual life is not guided by Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, as far as Krishna is concerned, they will be lost. They will be lost. So that's what that point Krishna is making there. Then, because Shastra talks about vidhinishedam. Vidhinishedam means what you are allowed and what you are not allowed. Do's and don'ts. That is spoken by Shastram. And otherwise, here is no Shastram. Tasman Shastram Pramanande Karya Karya Vyavasthitauho Jnatva Shastram Vidhanoktam Karma Kartumiha Arhasim. In the last verse, Krishna says, Tasman Shastram Pramanande. Therefore, Shastram is the authority, Krishna says. Because if you are not accepted Shastram, you are not going to reach the final destination. Therefore, Shastram is the authority. Tasman Shastram Pramanande. Why? Karya Akarya Vyavasthitauho. That karyam and akaryam, what is to be done, what is not to be done, is decided by Shastram, not by us. So, in order that we have to have a clear picture in our own mind, what is allowed by Shastram and what's not allowed by Shastram. If we do not understand in that way, what will happen is we will start the mental concoction. then what suits our mind will become Shastra. That is where all the problem starts. When we start interpreting things to suit our own needs or our own ideas, then we are deviating from Shastram, isn't it? So that's why Krishna says here, Tasmal Shastram Pramanam De. Nothing else is acceptable. Tasmal Shastram Pramanam De. Why? Karya Karya Vyavasthitau. It is from Shastram you have to know what is right and what's wrong. Yatva Shastra Vidhanoktam Karmakartam Iharkasi. Knowing very well what is acceptable to Shastram, one should execute one's duty, one karmam. Krishna says like this. So Krishna says, Tasmal Te Karya Karya Vyavasthitau Shastram. Shastram means Shruti, Smriti and Puranas. They are all Shastram. And by doing that, Krishna says, Pramanam Adaha Shastra Vidhanoktam Yatva Iha Karmam Iha Karma Kartam Arhasi. After knowing that, one gets qualified to execute the work. And Shastram is the authority, Krishna says here. And you become qualified to become the qualified person to execute work. So, ye shastra vidhimul srajya vartade kamakarata nasa siddhi mamapnodi nasukham na param gedim. Now, this is something, this verse requires a little bit detailed understanding. Krishna, that is the verse number 23, the last but one. Ye shastra vidhimul srajya vartade kamakarata nasa siddhi mamapnodi nasukham na param gedim. Krishna says here, one who has given up the instructions of Shastram and one who lives according to his own whims, he is prakritam, he is a mutha. Krishna says that's stupidity. Because it's not an intelligent thing. And this is one of the qualities of the demons. Demons do not care for the Shastram. And whatever that comes in their brain, in their mind, they will accept it as their authority. And they will work on that basis. In such a way, Krishna says, in such a life, a stupid life, and in that way, one will never elevate oneself. And their position is very pathetic in this world and in the life after death. This is talking about the demoniac nature, if you remember the demoniac nature. So, what happened? This is particularly important because, you see, this is particularly important because in the recent times, if you go back to say last 50 years or so, a lot of things have changed in this world considerably, isn't it? All over the world, big changes have happened due to the advancement of science and due to the advancement of the technology, if you want to call it like that. So, these changes, what impact it has on the human society, if you analyze it? You will see there that the human society has developed an attitude of questioning everything, isn't it? They have decided to question everything. And that questioning has gone to such an extent that we even started questioning the authority of God. Does God exist or not? Krishna exists or not? And what to speak about existence, his words are not even taken very seriously. His words are not even taken seriously. So this is the beginning of demoniac nature. Unfortunately, that is how Krishna sees that. So, those who are devotees and those who have firm faith in the Shastram, they will not consider Shastram as something for to be doubted about. They will not doubt about the authority of the Shastram. That's the nature of the devotees and the great personalities, Acharyas. But all the demoniac nature, how it has permeated in the society, is in this way, by questioning the authority of the supremacy of God, supremacy of Krishna, and also the authority of the Shastram. These things have happened due to the influence of the modern so-called education. We have learned how to question everything, and in the process question Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam as well. One after effect of this was, there developed a group of people, so-called scholars and historians, who have decided to take Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and such Vedic literature into their hands. And they started commenting on them. And not only that, they started teaching them also in the universities to students, thinking that they have understood it. This is what their attitude is. And this is the another side of demoniac nature. The demons completely reject Shastram. There's another type of demons who take Shastram and then subject to their intelligence and try to analyze from their intelligence and come out with some beautiful commentaries on that and also some instructions to the public what they should accept and what they should not accept from the Shastram. And it has gone to such an extent that it has become a more or less an acceptable practice in the scholar community nowadays, that they can do this very freely and they use it for their own advancement in material life very much. And they have done such a damage that the modern education system fell for it, and they also developed a generation like that. And that is a generation we see today, particularly in India, that generation who have completely lost faith in the Shastra. They could not take Shastram seriously, rather they could take the modern science very seriously. Because these scholars who took this Vedic literature into their university and they realized that there is money to be made here and there is funding coming from somewhere, wherever it is, they thought it's their duty to scrutinize these scriptures and tell the public what they are understanding, because they are supposed to be intelligent people. And according to Shastram, the problem starts when the living entity starts accepting the material body. Its material life starts from the moment soul coming into contact with intelligence. That is where the material existence begins. If you understand Bhagavatam, you will see there, Krishna explains this, that the moment the soul comes into contact with intelligence, in the process of its acceptance of material body, the intelligence starts creating a difficult situation for it. So, but those things are unknown to the ordinary people. Ordinary people are seeing these universities and the great institutions as the authorities in knowledge, isn't it? They look up to them. And these great institutions, they come up with such commentaries on Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. And ordinary people, they read it. And they get lost completely, lose their faith as well in the whole authority of the Vedic literature. The result is that they doubt the Shastram and they doubt Krishna and they become atheistic. This is the result of that. So, unfortunately, that is the situation in the world today. Most of the places you find this problem while talking about Krishna consciousness, they find this very, very difficult. And they cook up so many different theories from that. They create so many different theories in order to get their philosophy accepted or their ideas accepted. So much damage they have done in this world because of this. In one instance, they have said that Ravana and Ramachandra, two personalities, they said Ramachandra belonged to the Aryan race. And according to them, Aryans have come from somewhere from Middle East or somewhere like that. They say they came to Bharatavarsham from there. Nowhere in the Shastram you will find anybody came from anywhere to Bharatavarsham. You won't find it anywhere. And they also cooked up this theory that Ravana was not an Arya. Rather, he was a demoniac prince who lived elsewhere. This way, they have categorized him into another group. Intention was to create fight between two groups of people. This was the great scholars have done this great job. Because they never understood first themselves. But they, whatever they understood, they put it like this. Because they came from the so-called scholarly groups, people were misled by that. In order to counteract or in order to understand these things properly, all you have to do is to read Ramayana. If you want to understand who Ramachandra is or who Ravana is. When you go back home, you can take Ramayanam and look at it, and you will see it yourself. When Hanuman was asked to go and see Sita Devi, when Ramachandra asked Hanuman to go and see Sita Devi, Hanuman reflects on the way how he should speak to Sita Devi. At that point, Hanuman says, "If I speak in Sanskrit to Sita Devi, Sita Devi might think about me that probably it is Ravana who has come in the guise of a monkey, dressed up like this, to speak to Sidadevi. Sidadevi might think like this. Hanuman says this in Ramayana. If Hanuman is saying like this, what is the language of Ravana? Hanuman says, if I speak in Sanskrit to Sidadevi, Sidadevi might think that it is Ravana who had come in the dress of like me, in the dress like me, and trying to talk to Sidadevi. If Hanuman has spoken like this, what is the language of Ravana then? In other words, Ravana was so perfect in Sanskrit as much as Ramachandra was. And according to Bhagavadam, Ravana is nobody else than a servant of Ramachandra in Vaikuntham, isn't it? Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu came here in two different dresses. One was Hiranyakashipu, and then in this lifetime, they came as Ravana and Kumbhakarna. So Bhagavadam is telling us like this. Scholars are telling us that the Sri Rama's ancestors, they had come from Middle East and they moved to somewhere in the north of India, and then they established a kingdom there. They are called Aryans. And Ravana's family, they lived in the south somewhere. They are Dravidians. All these things has come from these great scholars. They have no idea because they do not understand Ramayanam. They do not understand Bhagavatam. They think that this is all some stories that has been written by people. But we know better than that what has happened million years ago, because now we have got the skull and the bones. We have examined that. Now we have come to the right conclusion. And they are teaching this very happily. And sometimes we devotees also got victimized by this kind of mentality or this kind of teaching by the so-called scholars. So, if one's faith in the Ramayanam, if the words of Hanuman one should accept, or the words of the scholars one should accept. There are so many things in the Bhagavatam like this. When you start analyzing, you will see nothing agrees with the modern historians and modern scholars. So what do we do with the scholars then? What is the choice we have got? By reading that their conclusions, eventually one loses faith in the Shastram. One loses faith in the Shastram and you also become demoniac, Krishna says. And that is what Krishna is talking about in this verse. Trividam maragasyedam ye shastravidimul srajya vartate kamakaradaha. Giving up the Shastram, faith in the Shastram, and based out on lust, if he is acting like that, Krishna says, nasa siddhima vapnodi nasukham naparam yadim. For very little profit in this world, they are willing to do this. For a very little profit. What's that little profit? A little a job or some money they make from these things. This is what they gain from that. In fact, on the Vedic hymns, what they say about that is that these are some of the great historians who have wrote these things. They are saying that these Vedic hymns are prayers from the Aryans when they saw the lightning in the sky or thunder. They got frightened. And these were the hymns they were used for praying. They haven't got a clue what Vedic literature is about. And they are the scholars. And that's acceptable in the society. People go and study this for 8-10 years in the university, get their doctorate and come out as atheists. So this is what's going on. How sad it is. How unfortunate the whole situation is. Krishna is saying like this, that if you have understood Bhagavad Gita properly, and if you have learned the message of Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavadam, you don't have to become like this. There are many, many examples in this world of the other side also, of people who have left this world in the best way, in the right possible way. Because they understood Bhagavad Gita properly and they were able to do it. So otherwise what will happen? Krishna says here, nasa siddhimavatnodi nasukham naparangadim. Many, many people left this world in tears. They left this world in tears. Why? Because they could not understand Bhagavad Gita. They studied Bhagavad Gita and they studied Bhagavadam also, but they never understood it. And they left this world in tears. And there are other people who left this world very happily also. If you remember, when Mahatma Gandhi left this world, he was able to chant the holy name, isn't it, at the time of death. Why was that possible? Because Bhagavad Gita was inside. That has given that motivation to, that brought out that holy name at the right time in the tongue when he was leaving the body. Otherwise it wouldn't have happened, because he was able to understand Bhagavad Gita. And therefore Bhagavad Gita helped him to bring the holy name on his lips, on his tongues at the time of leaving the body. There are many others who left this world in total misery after studying Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Why? Because they have never understood it properly. There was, it so happened once, that a great personality, he spent a long time in the Himalayas. After he had understood Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and the message of these great literature. The result was that he spent a long time in Himalayas, in his meditations and in his austerities and penances, which he performed. He found to be ideal because it's the land of the sages, isn't it? The Himalayan mountains. All the great rishis and sages, they spend their time, long period of time in Himalayas, for the simple reason that they got the strength. That land itself is the tabohumi. Tabohumi means meant for tapas, meant for austerities and penances. So they spend their life like that. And in one instance, some people went to see him. So naturally, they were very much affected by this great soul's advancement spiritually. They came back to the land and to preach the message of Bhagavad Gita to others. So after many years, that person was leaving his body. He was leaving his body in the Himalayas. So some of his disciples went to see him. When they went there, what they saw was very disturbing to their own mind. Why? Because this great soul, this sannyasi who was there, after performing his severe austerities and penances, he has almost lost his health to such an extent, it was virtually only the bones were left, and just as a bag of bones and a skin covering that. That's all. So when the disciples saw that, they were very, very disturbed that he has to leave his body like this in Himalayas, unable to take any help from the modern medicine or the doctor, and why he should leave like this. So they invited him to come to Delhi. They told him, why don't you come to Delhi and take the treatment and get recovered and then come back to Himalayas again. That's what they said to him. His answer was very simple. He asked one straightforward question to them. No one dies in Delhi? He said. Does nobody else dies in Delhi? That was the only question he had to ask. At that time, the disciples realized the foolishness of the question. How could he ask that question to the disciples? Because he has realized Bhagavad Gita in his life. He has realized Bhagavad Gita. And for one who has realized Bhagavad Gita, there is no such thing as death. Death is for those who have not understood Bhagavad Gita. For them, what they have to do, at the time of death, they have to cut their body, send the samples for testing to America, urine to India, stool to Australia, and then get all the reports back from all over the places. Then your GP will say, see this consultant. Do all that, whatever you like. But Bhagavad Gita is saying one thing to us. What is that? In the Bhagavatam also, this message is very clear. Soul does not die. We do not die. If this understanding is strong in a person, where is the question of suffering and spending all energy in all these things? Today that is what is happening, isn't it? We consider a wealthy man is very fortunate. Why? Because at the time of death he has got all the illnesses from all the sinful activities what he has done. And then everything has to be tested, urine, stool, blood, everything. And the modern medical system is also such that it gives you a chart, what all tests you can be done, machine, this scan, that scan, anything and everything, and still hoping that he may survive, but at the end he leaves and goes. Yeah. And here we have a situation where someone who understood Bhagavad Gita, and he understood that what did Sudeva Goswami said to Parikshit at the last minute, Tum tu rajan marishedi. This is the words he has used. Tumtu Rajan Marishedi. The last 12th canto of Bhagavatam, you will find this statement. Tumtu Rajan Marishedi. My dear Parikshit, death is not going to, there is no such thing as death. Tumtu Rajan Marishedi. Pashubuddhi Imam Jahi. He says this Pashubuddhi. Pashubuddhi means animal thinking. Animals think, I'm going to die. This fear comes for the animal, not for the realized soul. Sudeva Goswami, Parikshit Maharaj, and all these great sannyasis who have gone through this process, they were not frightened of death. This is the message what we have to learn from this. Otherwise, we will have to leave this world in tears. We'll have to leave this world in tears. If you don't realize Bhagavad Gita, our departure will be very miserable from this world. That is what Krishna is pointing out here. So, if you go to the modern authorities or the scholars on Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, they will not be able to help you on these things. These things has to come from the acharyas and their instructions, those who have trained us to practice spiritual life in the proper way. It is through them, their mercy and Krishna's mercy, that one gets released from this unfortunate situation. Tum tu rajan marishyedi pashubuddhim imam jahi. Pashubuddhim imam jahi. This pashubuddhi, that is how Sukadeva Goswami says. It is a pashubuddhi. Pashubuddhi means animal's thinking. Pashubuddhim imam jahi. He says, give it up, he says to. And at that point is the one when Parikshit Maharaj realized the soul. He got self-realized at that point because of Sudeva Goswami's mercy at that time. You can see this in the 6th chapter of the 5th or 6th chapter of the 12th canto. You will find this. So, so as I mentioned before, this verse is important from this point of view also. In order to reflect on these things is important, because unless you reflect on it, you will not understand the difference, because it is very easy to confuse people with some scholarly statements from the Shastram, from the universities and all that. And what did they do good to anyone? Only thing is they have confused you and they have misled you in their with their theories. What, sometimes some of the theses, what they call it, isn't it? Theses, or whatever theses they prepare from Ramayana. They have written theses on Ramayana. They have written theses on Bhagavatam. They have written, they have subjected Krishna also for their scrutiny. And they have analyzed Krishna's personality. And they said, oh, he has got these defects, and he has got these things right. And like this, they conclude, and they present this in papers, and they get their so-called doctorate, and all that. And they feel extremely satisfied because the salary is coming every month for what they have done. And somebody is paying for it. These are the unfortunate personalities. Mudhe janmani janmani. Life after life, their journey is not in the proper direction because they have chosen the wrong path. That demoniac thinking. This is what Krishna is talking about. When one does not understand Krishna through the eyes of the Shastram or through the authority of the Acharyas or the authority of the great devotees, then we will fall into this pit very easily. We'll fall into this situation. Therefore, yashastra vidimul srijya vartade kamakaryagal nasa siddhim avatnodi nasukham na parangadim. Parangadi means the ultimate journey. And one should be able to execute that peacefully. Shandi. One should be able to leave this world peacefully. Otherwise, what is it called? Mahadim vinashti. It is a big loss that if one has to leave this world without a proper peaceful way. You can only leave peacefully if Bhagavad Gita is inside. That is what Krishna is saying. And some personalities like Mahatmaji and others are showing to us how it is possible to leave this world peacefully. And at the time of death, that thoughts of Bhagavad Gita has brought them the holy name of Krishna to their tongue. And they were able to live peacefully. So, in the next verse, tasma shastram pramanam ve karya karya vyavasthitau jnana yatva shastra vidhanoktam karma kartam iharghasi. Krishna says there, therefore shastram and Vedas are the authority, nothing else. And if you understand them, the instructions in the shastram, and what is allowed and what is not allowed, on that you should act. That one who lives in that way, Krishna says, his life is auspicious in this world as well as in the next world. Therefore, Krishna is advising, live accordingly, based on Shastram. Now, with this verse, this 16th chapter is coming to an end, isn't it? What was this chapter titled? Devasura Sambad Vibhaga Yogam. In other words, divine and the demoniac nature. That is how. And basically in this chapter, what was discussed was the asuric nature, isn't it? Demonic nature was discussed more than the divine nature. Because Krishna says, divine nature I have already discussed before, but in this particular chapter, Krishna has discussed the demonic nature. Then, when you also study this chapter, it will also open up something else. If you reflect on these things, you will see that this divine and demonic nature is in everyone. Isn't it? It's there in everyone. We also have some divine nature, but a lot of demonic nature. More it's on the other side. And basically, in our life in this world, what's normally happening is, it is a fight going on inside, between the divine and the demonic nature. Constantly we are pushed into that. Our own mind, sometimes we is thinking, somebody is telling us from inside, no, that's not right thing to do. Somebody else is telling us from the other side, no, you carry on doing it, nothing will happen. Isn't it? This is the nature of the mind. So, this samskar, or the divine or the demonic nature, this fight is also going within our own mind. It's also going on within our own mind. But Krishna has put it in a much more graphical way for us to understand what demonic nature means, what divine nature means. But strictly speaking, they're actually happening inside us. And in the Puranas, if you take, Kashyapa Prajapati has two wives. Who are they? Didi Devi and Aditi Devi. Vedavyasa Maharshi brought these personalities to show to us that how studying them, you will notice that it is also a reflection of our own inside. Kashyapa Prajapati is considered to be the living entity. And Didi Devi represents the demonic nature. Represents the demonic nature. Aditi Devi represents the divine nature. And you can see how it is portrayed in the Bhagavatam. Aditi Devi's children were the demigods. And Didi Devi's children were the demons. Isn't it? So, that through Puranas, Vedavyasa is educating us that when you study Kashyapa Prajapati's life with these two contradicting nature, two wives with two contradicting nature, it will give you an insight into how the same thing applies to us also in our own mind. These two people are working there, Didi Devi and Aditi Devi, in all of us. Isn't it? So sometimes Didi Devi becomes very powerful, sometimes Aditi Devi becomes very powerful. Then, and this fight that is happening within our own mind, consciousness, our own mind, is nothing but a battle between these two, Didi Devi and Aditi Devi, her children, Didi's children and Aditi's children. That is what is actually happening within us also, in one way. So, Krishna concludes this chapter in this particular way and stresses the importance of accepting Shastram as the authority. If we do not accept Shastram, that means we have no possibility of progressing in spiritual life. That's what Krishna is saying there. And iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Upanishadsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Sri Krishna Arjuna Samvade Devasura Sambandh Vibhag Yoga Nama Shodashodhyaya. So with that, the 16th chapter is finished. Now, we will go into the chapter 17. We'll go into chapter 17. Going down on this. Okay. Chapter 17. Chapter 17 is called one. It's called Shraddhatraya Vibhaga Yogam. Shraddhatraya Vibhaga Yogam. So up to now in Bhagavad Gita, what we have seen is that a same topic Krishna is presenting in different ways to Arjuna, so Arjuna can understand it. Isn't it? So Arjuna can understand it. When you come to this 17th chapter, Arjuna picks up a question from 16th chapter. If you observe it carefully, you will see. When Krishna said that Shastram, Tasmal Shastram Pramanamte, therefore Shastram is the authority, Krishna said, isn't it? In the last chapter, Krishna said, Tasmal Shastram Pramanamte. So Arjuna is asking a question based on that. It is based on that statement, this question comes in the first verse in the 17th chapter. Arjuna is asking a very interesting question here. Arjuna says, Arjuna Vacha, Yashastram vidhi mulsrajya, Yajande shraddhayanvidaha, Tesham nishtaduka Krishna, Satvam aho rajastamaha. What does it mean? It means, hey Krishna, Arjuna is saying, Krishna, ye those shastra vidhim ulsrajya, those who ignore shastram, In the last chapter, Krishna says, Tasma Shastram Pramanande. Shastram is the authority. In this verse, Arjuna is asking, Hey Krishna, ye Shastravidhim Ulsrajya, Shraddhaya Anvidaha, but very seriously, with great attention, Yajande Tesham Nishtatu Ka. Those who are executing their spiritual life seriously, but ignoring the Shastram, what will happen to them? It's a very interesting question. Kim Satvam? Aho Kim Rajaha? Athava Tamaha? Are they in the mood of goodness? Are they in the mood of passion? Or are they in the mood of ignorance? This is the question. Now, why did Arjuna ask this question? Because Krishna said, Shastram is the authority, isn't it? Arjuna says, everybody is not following Shastram. You can see in this world, the demons reject Shastram. They, of course, there is no question. Arjuna is not interested what will happen to them. That's no concern to Arjuna. But Arjuna's question here is, there are people who don't follow Shastram, but they will follow other people and follow them. Like, for example, it is quite common, we follow traditions, isn't it? We follow traditions in our own life. Like our grandparents, what they did, or parents, what they did. So the children also, the sons and daughters, they also think, oh, my mother did like this, or my father did like this, or my grandfather did like this, and they take that as the authority, and they go along with it. There are people like that in this world. Arjuna is asking about them here. He is not saying that it is not referring to those people who have rejected Shastram. These people have not rejected Shastram. Only thing is, they have not studied Shastram. They have not rejected it. There are people who reject Shastram and do things on their own. That Krishna already has written them off. There is no hope for them. But there are people who have not studied Shastram. They did not, somehow or the other, they didn't take interest to study Shastram. But on the other hand, they still follow certain traditions based on their faith in those personalities, like, as I said, parents, grandparents and all that. If one follows that route, what kind of faith is that? This is what Arjuna is asking here. Ka Krishna, tell me that, what is then, what will happen to such people? Is it in the mood of goodness? Is it in the mood of passion? Or is it in the mood of ignorance? It's a very interesting question. Krishna has asked like this, Arjuna has asked this question even before also. If you see in one instance, Arjuna has asked like this. That was in the sixth chapter. If you look in the sixth chapter, 37 verse. Verse 37. What did Krishna say? Arjuna say there? Arjuna Vacha. Arjuna says, Ayri Shraddhayo Vedo Yoga Chalida Manasa Aprapi Yoga Samsiddhim Kamgadi Krishna Gachani. Krishna, Arjuna says there, what is the fate of those people who have fallen from the yoga system? What is their destination? Kamgadi Krishna Gachani. Krishna, where do they go? Arjuna asked Krishna earlier in the sixth chapter. Similarly here also, Arjuna is saying, that what is their ultimate destination? What will happen to them? That's why Krishna is saying, Tesham Nishtaduka Krishna. Yesha Arjuna Vacham. Arjuna says, Yeshastra Vidimul Sridja Yajande Shandhayan Vidaha Tesham Nishtaduka Krishna Satvamaho Rajastamaha. That after not caring for the Vedas and the Shastras and perform all kinds of spiritual activities like sacrifices, what is their situation? Because unless one has Shraddha, one has serious interest in something, one cannot do it, isn't it? And properly when one is situated, he will naturally study the Shastra and then develop Shraddha in that, in the Shastra. But some people, they don't study that, they don't take note of it, but still they have Shraddha at the same time, based on their experiences in this world. And what kind of Shraddha is that? This is what Arjuna was asking in this first verse, Arjuna Vacha. Now, before we begin this chapter, it is called Shraddhatraya Vibhaga Yoga. It is called Shraddhatraya Vibhaga Yoga. Like last chapter was called Devasura Sambad Vibhaga Yoga, Divine and the Demoniac Nature. This chapter is called Shraddhatrayam. Shraddhatrayam means the Sattvic Shraddha, Trayam, three kinds of Shraddha. Shraddha in the mode of goodness, Shraddha in the mode of passion, and Shraddha in the mode of ignorance. That is why it's called Shraddhatrayam. Shraddhatraya Vibhaga Yogam. And all Krishna is doing here is in this chapter is showing our mental culture, in three different ways, and reviewing that in a nice way, so that we understand what our, because this chapter is a very interesting chapter. Well, I'll tell you why. It is interesting because, you know, I'm sure most of us have asked this question. I have done so many things in spiritual life, but nothing is happening to me. Isn't it? How many times I've heard this question? From how many people, I don't know. So many times people raise the same thing again and again and again. They'll keep asking this question. So Krishna felt now it is a time has come to answer that question in a very effective way. So if you understand that answer, then you won't ask that question again. If you not understood that answer, you'll ask the same question again. We'll come back with the same question. I've been chanting 16 rounds, so many years I've chanted, and I've done this, I've studied, read Bhagavatam, I've been taking only prasadam for so many years, I've not eaten anything, I followed all the four regulative principles. So why nothing is happening to me? I'm still like that before. This is the question, isn't it? So the answer to that, Krishna comes out with that in this, when he reviewing our mind. That's what he does here. He reviews our mind and tells us. Not only that, in this chapter, Krishna also says, no matter how many times I repeat, Krishna says, you are not able to fix your mind on the message, what I have given. Vishaya Grahanam it's called, not able to understand what Krishna has said. And there is no, not able to accept it completely and to fix your life on that basis. Isn't it? You know that very well. We don't need an explanation on that. We hear everything, comes and goes out, and then we think, why it's not happening to us? That means our own mind is not firm and fully situated in what Krishna has spoken. Why does that happen? That is what Krishna is reviewing in this chapter. Again and again. Already he has reviewed it in different ways. Through divine and demonic nature he has reviewed in one way. Prior to that he has also reviewed in a three modes of material nature. He has reviewed that. The same thing he is reviewing in through different ways. So that let the mind somehow get fixed up in this. But unfortunately what happens? Even after putting through all these different proposals, we are still the same we are. Nothing is changing in us. And that is, so Krishna is giving it a last try, as far as I can see. It's a last try he's making on us. If this gets through, let it get through. Otherwise, what can you do? What can you do? When we keep on asking questions, where is the end to all these things? That's what Krishna is saying. That in forms of three types of Shraddha, Krishna is going to talk about this. Three types of Shraddha. So, before we talk about that, there is what is known as, you know, if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will find there three things mentioned. What are they? Sambandham, Abhideyam and Prayojanam. Isn't it? Sambandham, Abhideyam and Prayojanam. If you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, you will find there these things are discussed. These things, when it is given a little bit more thought about it, there is what is known as Anubandha Chatushtayam. Anubandha Chatushtayam means, apart from Sambandham and Prayojanam, also any Vedic literature when you study, first thing what comes into the mind is, who is qualified to study the literature? In other words, who is qualified to study literature? Vedic literature is not something anyone, everyone can buy a paperback issue from the bookstall and start reading in the train when traveling and says, I have understood everything. No, that's not studying Vedic literature. Vedic literature studying means, first of all, Krishna expects certain qualifications from us. Adhikari Vedam. Adhikari Vedam means qualification. You qualify yourself to understand the text. That is Adhikari Vedam. So this Adhikari Vedam or Adhikari Tvam, whatever it is called, is something what we have to acquire from our side. From our side we have to acquire that qualification to understand it. That's Adhikari Tvam. Then secondly, Krishna is talking about the subject matter. What is discussed in the Vedic, in the literature. In that particular, say Bhagavad Gita, for example. Who should study Bhagavad Gita? That is one thing. What is the qualification needed for studying Bhagavad Gita? And the second thing is, what is the topic that is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita? And then Sambandham. Sambandham means, what is our connection with Bhagavad Gita? What is expected from Bhagavad Gita? And the last one, what will happen if you study Bhagavad Gita? Four things. Adhikari, Vishayam, Sambandham and Prayojanam. Prayojanam is, what is the benefit of studying Bhagavad Gita? So, if we understand Bhagavad Gita in this way, then your mind will get more absorbed in Bhagavad Gita and start reflecting on why these things are important. So, if you go back to the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has answered himself this question in the first verse. If you take the first verse of the 9th chapter, Krishna has answered this question. First question. What was the question? Question was this. That, who is qualified? Can anybody say who is qualified to study Bhagavad Gita? Krishna has answered in that verse. If you have a, go at it and see, Krishna says there, who is qualified to study Bhagavad Gita? Shri Bhagavan Vaja, first verse. The answer is there. Let's see if anybody has thought about this. What's that? Sorry? No, there's a particular word Krishna has used there.
Envy.
Precisely, yes. One who is free from envy, anasuyave, Krishna says. Idam tume gukhyadamam pravakshyami anasuyave. Anasuyave is the adhihariptam or qualification for studying Bhagavad Gita. If one is envious of Krishna or envious of the authority of the Supreme Personality, he is not qualified. There is no point in opening Bhagavad Gita with that mood. If he is thinking that he has the understanding, no, that is the qualification. And then Krishna says, the topic what is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita, what is that? That is also, Krishna says there, isn't it? What is the topic that is discussed? It is also in the same verse, the answer. Idam dume guhyadamam pravakshyami anasuyave jnana vijnana yogena jnana vijnana sahidam yajnatva moksha se shubhal. What does it mean? No, not really. You have to tell me the exact words from that verse. Because only then it will be precise. Anything when you translate it, it loses the whole thing. You will see there are two words. Jnana vijnana sahidam. That is the answer to that. Vishayam is jnanam and vijnanam. In other words, jnanam is knowledge and vijnanam is the practical application of that into life. So, vishayam or the topic of discussion in Bhagavad Gita is jnanam and vijnanam. Knowledge and the practical application of knowledge into one's own life. That's what Krishna is saying here. How to bring that knowledge into one's life. That is vijnanam, isn't it? For example, you may study so many Vedic literature, but you have not learned how to bring it into your own life. What is the use? What's the use of studying that? Then otherwise it will become a ritual. Like so many rituals will do, it will become another ritual to that. No, Bhagavad Gita is not for that. Bhagavad Gita is meant for changing our life. It should bring that change in our attitude, in our lifestyle, and it should become the way Krishna wants us to be. That is why Krishna says, jnanam vijnana sahidam. Vijnana sahidam means knowledge associated with bringing it into practice into one's own life. That is what is the topic of discussion. Then the third question is sambandham. Sambandham means what? What is the sambandham here? That's a very interesting word. Well, if you can find the answer, I'll hats off to you. You find the answer in that. What is sambandham here? You can come up with the answer.
Material existence.
Sorry?
Material existence.
No, sorry. Not right. The right word you have to tell me. The verse is there. Idam dumi guhyadamam pravakshyami anasuyave jnanam vijnana sahidam yajnatva mokshase shubhal. This is the verse. Now, we have seen jnanam vijnana sahidam is the sambandham. isn't it? Adhyaritvam is already mentioned. Who was the Anasuya way? Vishayam is the Jnana Vijnana Sahidam. Now we have to see what is Sambandham. What is Sambandham? No. No. Guhyatamam. That's the word. Guhyatamam is the word. And that let us understand what it means. Guhyatamam means most confidential, Krishna says. It's not understood easily. Therefore, it's very confidential. Idantume guhyatamam. Pravakshyami. It is confidential. Because when you understand that, then the thing what you are searching after is there already within you. This is most interesting. You are searching after Krishna, isn't it? The soul you are searching, which is Krishna's part and parcel. And that thing what you are searching is already there within you, but you don't know about it. Therefore it is confidential. You see how Krishna has kept it confidential? Krishna himself has kept it confidential. Krishna says to us, I am situated within you, in your heart, as the spirit soul. And you are going searching for me all over the world. When I am there within you, and you are not aware of even that. I'll give you an interesting story about this. When you hear this story, you will realize it, what we are talking about. Once it so happened, a businessman was traveling by train. So in the olden days, you know, today we have banks everywhere and people don't carry cash these days so much, isn't it? Either it's a credit, most of people have no cash at all. They'll have one card, plastic card, and that swipe everywhere and get their life through with that. But in the olden times, there was no this plastic card. Everyone carried cash with them. Business people particularly. They'll have huge amounts of cash. And they'll carry that for going to buy something. You'll see in the, Chaitanya Charitamrita and all, Sanatana Goswami was traveling, so many gold coins he carried and all that. It's like this, you know, it was a common practice. Till recently, business people always carried cash with them. When they had to buy different goods from different places, groceries or whatever, they had to buy and ship it, they had to pay cash everywhere. So that was the system. So one businessman was traveling once with a lot of cash with him. So he got into a train, and it was a long train journey, lasting for about 2 days in the train. In India, there is still train journey from Delhi to Thiruvananthapuram, it takes about 56 hours. So people travel like that still. So when they were traveling, he got a reservation in the train. He got into the train and he sat down in the train and he made sure he took his money and counted and put it back safely. There was somebody else who was sitting opposite to him in the train. And he noticed this, that he had so much cash with him. So the other person, he was a real thief, he was. And thieves, they smell, isn't it? Like the dogs where the money is. They can smell where the money is. He's noticed this cash. And he thought that this 2 days journey is a good opportunity if I can steal this money out of this man, the businessman. And he was waiting for an opportunity to come. When he falls asleep or... And once they take the money, they'll disappear straight away. In the next station, they are gone. You don't see the money is gone. So it happens all the time. You'll see in the trains, there's always beware of pickpockets and all this mentioned there. There are people traveling in the train because traveling is not so expensive in these trains. And it is possible that you may find a good opportunity to steal money. So this person was sitting opposite and he noticed this businessman with all his money with him. So what he thought was, it was coming evening hour, so he thought, maybe I'll go to the bathroom, change my dress, come back and then I'll fall asleep. So I'll go to sleep, so the other businessman also will go to sleep. You know the berths in the Indian trains, there are three on facing each other. So people chat each other and pass their time like this in the train journey. So this businessman saw that passenger opposite to him. They were chatting together for some time and he went to sleep. So our businessman also went to the bathroom and washed himself and changed his clothes and came back and he also went to sleep. After some time, this thief, he got up and he searched everywhere where the money is. Where has he kept the money? He couldn't find anywhere. He couldn't find anywhere the money.
So he thought, this is amazing that I have done this business for so long. I'm such an expert, and I'm not winning this. Where it is? So he put all his efforts. He couldn't find it. The journey was coming to an end. At the next day, they got up in the morning, changed clothes, everything, this and the other, they sat. So before they reached the destination station, this thief was very impressed by his ability to keep money so safely. So he asked this man, businessman, "You know, let me tell you openly," he said, "what I've done. I must admire you," he said. "So far no one has escaped from the net what I have put. But you have survived this. And I really like to ask you one question," he said. I knew that you had all this cash with you. Now that we are going to come to the station in half an hour, I wanted to know from you, where did you hide that money?" he said. He asked this question. The businessman laughed. He said, "Do you want me to tell you?" he said. I said, "Yeah." "I kept it underneath your pillow," he said. "Underneath your pillow, because I knew that you will search everywhere else except there. The soul in us is like that. It's there, but we will go searching for it all over the world." Isn't it? That is why Krishna is saying here, "Idam tume guhyadamam." It is guhyam. Confidential it is. It is there inside. Don't have to go very far looking for it all over the holy places and the temples everywhere in the world searching for the truth. There is no need for that. This is the beauty of Bhagavad Gita. Only Bhagavad Gita tells you what you are looking for is within you. Nowhere else you have to search for that. Which other scripture in the world tells you? Because Krishna created us in that way. Everything what is in the creation is within us. What is in Samashti, it is in Vyashti. What is in Brahmandam, it is in Pindandam. It is called Pindandam. This body is called Pindandam. So, material, Krishna's knowledge is like this, that anything what you are looking for, the material elements, mind, intelligence, false ego, these are the same. Bhinna, Pragati, Rashtada. Whole material creation is nothing but all these things, they are all within you. And if you study this body enough, properly, and understood it properly, you have understood everything what is to be known. That's the beauty of Bhagavad Gita. That's the beauty of Bhagavad Gita. All other scriptures in the world you can refer to. Nobody else will tell you this. Secret. And this is why it's called Guhyatamam. Oh, that is the Sambandham in this. So, Adhigari, Vishayam, Sambandham. All things are in that particular verse. Idam tume guhyatamam pravakshyami anasuyave jnana vijnana sahidam yajnatva mokshase shubhal. Now, the last one. What is that? Prayojanam. What is the prayojanam? What's the prayojanam mentioned in this verse now? If you can find that answer, the last answer. Yeah. Moksha means what? Moksha means? From? Yes, close to that, yes. Moksha se ashubhal, it says, isn't it? In the verse it says, moksha se ashubhal. Ashubhal means not only from the liberation, not only liberation, it also means liberation, freedom from all material existence, completely. Freedom from material life and liberated state. That is what it is. Moksha se shubhal, Krishna says. So that is the prayojanam. These four things, adhigari, Vishayam, Sambandham, Prayojanam. All four things are answered in that one verse. Krishna has kept it like that. So, you can see there that whatever one is wandering around in the world inquiring after, isn't it? We are all wandering around. Have you seen people? They travel from America to India, India to America to find out truth. What's the truth? They go to all the great universities searching for the truth. But Krishna is saying, no, the truth is already there in you. The only thing is you have to know how to find it out. And that process is what is discussed in the Bhagavad Gita. So you can see that from this one particular aspect of Krishna's explanations here is to tell us that that Arjuna got to this situation now. What is my situation? That's what Arjuna wanted to know. Am I in the mode of goodness? Because Arjuna had no knowledge of the Shastram at that time.
That is important here. That's why Arjuna asked this question, what is the fate of a person who ignores the Shastram but still has got Shraddha in spiritual life? What is his fate? That's the reason Arjuna asked that question. Isn't it? That's the reason why Arjuna asked that question. Ya Shastra Vidimul Sarajya Vartade Kamakarada. Krishna spoke like that. And answer to that, Krishna, Arjuna is asking here. Ya Shastra Vidimul Sarajya Yajande Shraddhaya Nigaha. With Shraddha, seriousness, if one questions, what will happen? What is his fate? Is it in other words, Arjuna was clarifying his own position. Am I doing it in the mode of goodness, or in the mode of passion, or in the mode of ignorance? Isn't it? That's why, what is my own situation? Which group do I belong to? Sattvam, tamas or rajas? In which category do I fall into? This was that question. That's why he's saying, tesham nishtaduka krishna, sattvam aho rajasthama. Nishta means that how he is fixed up. Nishta means how he is fixed up, how steady he is. And what kind of nishta it is? Is it sattvam or is it rajas or is it tamas? That is what Arjuna has asked there. Tesham nishtaduka krishna, sattvam aho rajasthamaha. Whether it is sattvam, rajas or tamas. This was Arjuna's question there. Then, so whether he is sattvagunam, rajogunam or tamogunam. Now, this verse in the Bhagavad Gita is the 595th verse out of the 700 verses. This is 595. There is not many more verses left. This is a small chapter. This is 28 or so verses. And after that, we will finish the 17th chapter. When we finish the 17th chapter, we will have a review of all the 17 chapters, briefly. Just to know that the connection from 1 to 17, how it goes. We know to get a better feeling of the 17 chapters. And then we'll move on to the 18th chapter. So, from now, in this last attempt, as I mentioned before, that Krishna is explaining to us that the three, earlier he spoke about the three modes of material nature. Then he spoke in the form of divine and demoniac nature. And now Krishna is talking about the three kinds of Shraddha. Three kinds of Shraddha. We talked about Shraddha before, if you remember what Shraddha means, isn't it? Earlier times we have spoken about it. Here, something more Krishna brings into that. Let's see what he says. Shri Bhagavan Vacha. Krishna says, second verse. Trivida bhavati shraddha dehinam sa svabhavaja sattviki rajasi chaiva tamasi cheti tam shrunum. Krishna says, trivida bhavati shraddha dehinam sa svabhavaja sattviki rajasi chaiva tamasi cheti tam shrunum. Krishna says, a person's shraddha or faith develops in three different ways. What are they? You can call it as made in the mode of goodness, in the mode of passion, and in the mode of ignorance. Why it is like that? Because the chittam, or one's mind, is based on the mixture of these three things, isn't it? Sattvam, rajas and tamas exist there. Whichever quality is predominating, so accordingly his shraddha will also vary. In other words, suppose in a person's mind, he has these three modes of nature to different degrees. Out of these three modes of nature, whichever is predominating, accordingly his Shraddha will develop. We'll explain that a little bit more. Now, when one particular mode of nature is predominating, the other two will withdraw itself, and accordingly your actions will follow from that. Then, but due to association with the modes of nature, outside world, and due to particular time also, these Shraddha can change. That's what Krishna is saying here. Now let's try to understand what this Shraddha means. Earlier we talked about Shraddha. Shraddha means what? The one definition of Shraddha is, Shastrasya Guru Vakyasya Satya Budhyava Dharana Sa Shraddha. This is the definition. That means, one who has absolute faith in the Shastram, absolute faith in the words of the spiritual master, Shastrasya Guru Vakyasya, then Satya Budhyava Dharana, he has the absolute, he is willing to accept that as this is the truth. I do not have to inquire anything else. This what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita is the truth. And he is willing to accept it without any reservations. Satya Buddhyavadharana means Satya Buddhi. He is accepting as the truth, that one. Dharana. Sa Shraddha. That is called Shraddha. Now, this is the definition of Shraddha. Now, this Shraddha, where does it come from? Our original nature is called Swarupam, isn't it? Swarupam means our nature as the true nature of the soul. We are spirit soul. That is our true nature. So therefore, that is what is called as Swarupam. Our Swarupam is spirit soul. Now, from Swarupam comes what is called Swabhavam. Swabhavam means one's nature. From Swarupam comes one's Swabhavam. Swabhavam means Swarupam doesn't change. Swabhavam always changes. That you have to remember. Swarupam doesn't change. One's form doesn't change. But one's Swabhavam or nature will always change. Swabhavam is made of two things. What are they? Swabhavam is made of two things. Swabhavam includes, one, the vasanas you have acquired from your karma. Different kinds of karma you have executed in different lifetimes, also in this lifetime. From that, you have acquired what is called Swabhavam. What is called? Swabhavam. So, Swabhavam has come from karma. And karma vasana has developed, come to Swabhavam. What else comes to Swabhavam? The three modes of nature also mixes with these vasanas. And that becomes your Swabhavam. We have seen this before. Mind is also nothing but a combination of these two things. Your karma vasanas, what has come from previous lifetimes and in this life, and also the modes of nature you have associated with that. Immediately the mind starts into analyzing this, and that develops into your further activities in this world. It's completely based on that. That's why it's saying here, Trivida Bhavati Shraddha Dehinamsa Swabhavaja. Krishna says, it is from Swabhavam that this Shraddha has come. So when it, Trividam Bhavati Shraddha, the three types of Shraddha are there, it has come from Swabhavam. Krishna is trying to make us a little bit more conscious of our own nature, where it is coming from. Where it is coming from. Yeah. So, he says here, all these three things have come from Swabhavam. And this Shraddha, what has come from the Swabhavam. Swabhavam, from Swabhavam, Shraddha has come out. Yeah? Shraddhavan Labhade Jnanam. Krishna says, knowledge will come to such a person who has got Shraddha. So, we earlier analyzed Shraddha, and we saw that Shraddha is nothing but, we gave an example also, if you remember. Just like, where there is love, there is Shraddha towards that. We talked about this example. A mother, she has got a little child whom she is looking after all the time. Say, a year or 2 years old. She is always under the anxiety if the child will go and do something and falls into some trouble, falls into some problems. So, she is always keeping an eye on the child, isn't it? At the same time, she is cooking in the kitchen also. She is able to do both the things together. While cooking in the kitchen, she has left the child in the living room to play with toys or whatever it is. But at the same time, her mind, although while cooking here, is always with the child. Why she is able to do that? Because her mind, she has love for the child, isn't it? She has concern about the child's welfare. Therefore, because the love is there, Shraddha is there in her mind as far as the child is concerned, isn't it? So, that is what we discussed before, Shraddha. So, because Shraddha comes from that love, similarly, from that love for the child. Similarly, when we come to spiritual life also, if our Shraddha is somewhere else, no matter whole lifetime, if you keep reading, chanting, feasting, fasting, everything, at the end, because this one thing called Shraddha wasn't there, everything stays static.
Everything stays static. This is what Krishna is going to answer in the next verse. And this is the problem why we keep on asking this question. I have chanted, I have taken prasadam, I have went to the temples, I paid my best answers to all the Vaishnavas, everything I have done, but still I am as I am, nothing has changed. And Krishna is answering that question here, that your Shraddha wasn't there. You can see that in this very world where we are living, how Shraddha controls people. For example, if one's Shraddha is in making money, no matter where he goes, he will do that. Never mind, wherever he is, his mind will always work, I have to make money, I have to make money. This will be, this in a very unknown way, it will build up inside, that you cannot separate it out from him, because it is so inherent in him. And that way, similarly everything else if you take, those who are fond of good prasadam, every time their mind will be focused on that. Wherever they go, if they don't get good prasadam, the life is not worthwhile living. That's how it is for them. Why is it like that? Because he has got Shraddha in the food. Similarly, somebody has got Shraddha in the football, and wherever he goes, football is his top priority. Isn't it? Similarly, somebody has got football, some other interest, some sense gratification. That will guide him in his daily life. Also, you can see this. So, this is the reason when we come to spiritual life also, we have to know where our Shraddha is first. If my Shraddha is in the money, no matter I come to spiritual life, I'll be looking for making money there also. That'll be my goal. Although externally I may look all very advanced in devotees, but my Shraddha is in money. What can I do? It has not left me. I've forgotten to leave that because it has become so much a part of me. And Bhagavadam and Bhagavad Gita is telling us, if your Shraddha has not come to spiritual understanding, that is why that exact words Krishna uses there. Sattvic adhyatmiki Shraddha, Krishna says. The Sattvic Shraddha is that Shraddha which is based on spirituality, in spiritual knowledge. That is Shraddha for advancing in the spiritual life. Not karmam, karma Shraddha to Rajasi. Krishna says, karmam Shraddha, if one doing this, that and the other, all kinds of things, that karmam Shraddha is coming from your Rajasic nature. That is not your fault, your Rajasic nature is like that. So, this is what you are fighting against in daily life. And we are unable to do it, that's why it's always failing at the end. That's why it's always failing at the end. This is the verse, in the next verse, Krishna is bringing out this point very clearly to us. Don't take it, spiritual life is so simple, Krishna says. Because you have come with a particular nature in you, brought from several lifetimes and in this lifetime, and that is very strongly embedded in you. And that nature is not going to leave you so soon. And you have to fight against that. And that is the ability in a man, when who is fighting against that. When one comes to spiritual life, and when one realizes, all these things in this world are temporary, they are not going to help me at the time of death. What will help me is Krishna's lotus feet. And then endeavoring hard to please Krishna in this life, then his Shraddha is Sattvigi. Otherwise, even after coming to spiritual life, I am still thinking, how can I maintain my family? How will I maintain my social life? How will I maintain my good standard of living without losing anything? How can I have my spiritual life? It won't work. It won't work. Krishna is saying this in the very next verse. What does he say? Sattva niruva sarvasya shraddha bhavadi bharadaha shraddha amayoyam purusho yo yachraddha saye vasaha. Krishna says that sattva niruva sarvasya. Generally, we can say that normally when we refer to shraddha, it is generally referred to sattvagunam, in the mode of goodness. That is what the shraddha is. And when the sattvagunam expands, generally we can say your shraddha also increases, isn't it? So you can say that shraddha is nothing but a dharmam of sattvagunam. There is no harm in saying like that. But that is only a general rule. You have to remember that. But generally, every jiva, every living entity is shraddhamayam. Shraddhamayam means it has got shraddha. It has got shraddha. Everybody has shraddha. And because of this shraddha only, you are not able to leave the material existence. You are unable to leave the material world because of our shraddha here in this world. Our shraddha is so strong here. That's why we are unable to leave. Even those who are not in the mood of goodness,
They have Shraddha in sense gratification, isn't it? That is also Shraddha, because they devote their time and energy to acquire that. How are they able to do that? Because from inside, they have decided that this is what I want, and their Shraddha is developed on that basis. So, what kind of Shraddha one has, according to that, his words, his activities, and his thoughts will develop. According to his understanding, or according to his Shraddha, his words, his activities and thoughts will develop. And along with that, his samskar will also build up inside, his nature. So bhavam will build up in the same way. Krishna says here that and a living entity who lives a life in this world based on a particular type of Shraddha, what he has cultivated, then and he is completely absorbed in that. And in order to redirect him from that into another kind of life and Shraddha is a very difficult thing. It's not an easy thing to do that. Because when his Shraddha is so fixed up in that, the nature of the Krishna, Krishna is talking about us now, very deeper, trying to understand that, that how we are situated here, why we are finding it difficult to get any results from our activities. Why? Because the Shraddha is somewhere else. It's not here. It's easy to understand this. When a person who has developed the Shraddha in spiritual life, what will he do? First thing, he will start studying Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam seriously, isn't it? Krishna has given us this for what? To study and to understand it, what Krishna is saying there. But instead, Krishna, he will think that, let me distribute some books and let somebody else become Krishna conscious first. And I'll become later. So there is an element of rajovanam there in that. Alright, when you can't do anything to study yourself, sit down peacefully and study things, because of satugunam, lack of satugunam in a person, saving the world, everything is good, no harm. But first you have to save yourself where we are in trouble. Without able to do that, how is the question of saving somebody else comes? So that's why Krishna is saying this. Sattvika adhyatmika shraddha. Adhyatma means spiritual life. And spiritual life shraddha comes, then these qualities will build up, that his all his activities, his thoughts, his mind and his words, everything will be directed in that direction. Whereas when it is on a different platform, that shraddha is, only when one is able to do that, forcefully move that shraddha from that to this, then he can change his samskar, he can change his nature. that is the reason that even after hearing Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam and for all so long a time, because our Shraddha in material world has not gone away. Our Shraddha in material world has not gone away. Therefore that samskaram is not building up in us. That samskaram is not building up in us. When the attachment for material existence and material world and that Shraddha comes down, then the adhyatmik shraddha or the spiritual knowledge will and the spiritual culture will develop in a person. And that has to be done by us, nobody else. We ourselves have to do that. But to do that, there is strong obstacle in doing that, isn't it? That it is not something which you can easily shift overnight like that. Even if he wants to do it deliberately, it is not possible to do that, because anyone who has Shraddha in anything, he thinks it is the best. That's why it is. Isn't it? So for example, one who has got a lot of Shraddha in food, he thinks that is the best thing in life to do. He has already convinced himself in that way. He is not convinced that that is not the best thing. That's why he is able to devote so much time for finding the best prasadam. Is it not? That's because his Shraddha is in there. He wants his best prasadam at the right time, served in the right way, and everything. Why? Because that Shraddha is so strongly in that. That is the reason, nothing else. Now similarly, our Shraddha in the society is strong. In the community, it is strong. In the community, it is strong. Because I am thinking, if my Shraddha in the community is strong, that community will save me. This is my foolish understanding. Community won't save you. At the time of death, community won't be there. Bank balance won't be there. Your so-called family members won't be there. The only person who will be there is Krishna. So if this realization comes, then slowly you can change your Shraddha from all these unwanted things in this world. This Shraddha, which is left on so many other wrong places, that Shraddha has become the priority in our life. And therefore, we are finding it difficult to put our Shraddha towards Krishna. And therefore, nothing is happening even after practice of sadhana for so long. This is what Krishna is pointing out there. That anyone who has got Shraddha in anything, he knows it is the best thing. That is why he has got so much Shraddha in them. And no matter anybody else tells him, it's not going to change easily. That is why I was saying that there is very strong obstacles in changing this. Even if he reads in the Shastram, even if he hears it many times, still he won't be able to change it. In short words, you can say, the living entity by nature has got one important thing called Shraddha. And that Shraddha, whatever one has in Shraddha, in whatever thing he has got, that is his life actually. His actual life is that Shraddha itself. That's what determines his life. And that is very difficult to change. It has to come in a natural way, through knowledge and through realizations. And what will happen, when it will happen, to whom it will happen, nobody can say like that. There is no answer to that question. When can my Shraddha will shift? That will happen in its own way, only purely, mostly by Krishna's mercy. That is why it happened. So you can see why Vairagyam was specified in the beginning. Vairagyam is necessary that, you see, while studying Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam and all, if we do not have the right frame of mind, we will not understand Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. We will not understand Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. That is what that verse is talking about. I hope Shraddha has been understood in the proper way. Sattva nirupa sarvasya Shraddha bhavadi bharadaha Shraddha mayoyam purusho Yoya Shraddha sa eva saham. That swabhavam once, if you want to know a person, if you want to study a person, all you have to do is to see where his Shraddha is, or what his belief is. You will see his Shraddha will determine his character, his activities, his words. Everything is determined by his Shraddha. So simply by studying that, one can see that where one is going, that person is going. Therefore, in the Ekadasha Skandham, Krishna says like this, Sattva Madhyalmiki Shraddha. Then, what else Krishna says? Sattva Madhyalmiki Shraddha. Karma Shraddha tu Rajasi. Tamasya Adharmaya Shraddha. Adharmam, irreligious activities, that is where when Tamogunam predominates, your Shraddha will go. Tamasya Adharmaya Shraddha. Malsevayam tu Nirguna. When you cross these three modes of material nature, a living entity does nothing else except serving Krishna. Malsevayam tu Nirguna. That is what he does at that point. In fact, sometimes people say that when one is in pure goodness, what will be his condition? What will be his condition? People ask that, isn't it? So the answer to that question is, if one is properly situated in goodness, he will only do one thing in this world. What is that? To get escape from this material life once for all. For spiritual realization. That's what he will be working for. He'll be only working for that, to realize the self. That is the symptom of one in mood of goodness. One good mode of passion is very well known, will be working hard to earn well, to live well, and to enjoy life. This and one in the mode of ignorance, tamoguna means what? Always in ignorance. What does it mean? It means that he has no goal, or laziness, and sleeping all the time, and always unable to fight against the modes of nature. Always controlled by the lower modes of nature. No knowledge, totally in ignorance, always, and that is hell. Krishna says that is hell. So, in these two verses, in the 17th chapter, Krishna has spoken this important point, that your Shraddha is what it determines, where you are going. And unless one puts the effort to change, and that is what his spiritual life is all about. Spiritual life is all about this changing the Shraddha from this to that, from the material existence to spiritual realizations. So for that, all the Shastra has been written to bring us to that point. Then, in the next verse, what is Krishna saying?
two verses together, fifth and sixth. Sorry, verse 3. Verse 3. This is another interesting verse in the Bhagavad Gita. You see, Yajande Satyuga Devan, what happens when Shraddha builds up in a person? If it is in the mood of goodness, what will happen is, he will worship the devatas, demigods, and when Satviki Shraddha, he will worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the devatas, great personalities like that. And Rajasi Shraddha, when in the mood of passion it builds up, what will happen is Yakshas, Gandharvas and Rakshasas, they will be worshipped. And Tamasi Shraddha, in the mood of ignorance when it increases, they will start worshipping the ghosts and evil spirits, and like that they will feel like worshipping them. This will come from that. So Krishna is now talking about one important thing. Ejande Satviga Devan Yaksharakshamsi Rajasaha Prayadan Bhudaganamschani Ejande Tamasajanaha. So how these three modes of nature affects a person under three conditions? That's what he's explaining there. You see, even in this world, according to our nature, we develop relationship with others also, isn't it? We develop relationship with other people according to our nature. For example, devotees like to develop relationship with devotees, not with the karmis and demons, okay? Sometimes we have to do superficially, show a relationship. But in the hearts, there is no relationship there. Why? Because of this reason only, because of our nature is different. Similarly, our mode of worship will also change in the same way. When the Sattvagunam builds up inside, mode of goodness builds up inside, we will worship the mode deities in the mode of goodness, Sattvika Devadas. And when Rajogunam builds up the Rajasic nature, the deities which are the Rajasic nature, we will worship them. Similarly, Tamogunam increases, develops into the devils and the spirits and all. And also, the results that come from that worship also will be opposing each other. And the person who has not come to Sattvagunam will never realize that his responsibility is to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is above these three modes of nature. I mentioned this before also. That is why, if you want to escape from the modes of nature, you have to worship Krishna and Krishna alone. There is no other possibility of escaping freedom from the modes of nature. Because all other devadas also, yakshas, rakshasas, pretas, bhutas, pishas, everything is under the modes of nature. So long as our desire to escape from the modes of nature is not very strong, we will continue to worship the other demigods and other devadas, with the result to escape, with the result to get their benefits from different, with the different desires. And only when the modes of nature has come minimized or come diminished in our mind, only then you will get that desire to serve Krishna. You will get that desire to serve Krishna. Otherwise, mind will be wavering very much in different directions. Sometimes you think, I'll worship this demigod, this other demigod. So many other thoughts will come very strongly in us. That's what Krishna is saying here. That, in fact, if you look at it this way, that what is Satvigam? Satvigam means in the mood of goodness, isn't it? Satvigam, Ajanda Satvigam Devan. So, in the Bhagavadam, if you look, you will find that you can worship different demigods if you have some material desires. That is discussed in the Bhagavadam. It says there, if you want knowledge, you should worship Lord Shiva. If you want a good marriage, you should worship Sri Parvati. If you want a lot of wealth, you should worship Kubera. If you want a lot of musical capacity, you should worship the Gandharvas. If you want different material things, material desires, if someone has got, somebody wants to be very beautiful, and it's also mentioned who you should worship,
And if you want knowledge of the knowledge of the medical science, you should go to Ashwini Kumaras. Like that, a lot of things are mentioned in the Bhagavadam in the beginning. Now, it is not going to happen overnight that we will become pure devotees and without any of these desires. Will it happen? I don't think it will happen. As and when we encounter a situation in life with some difficulty, immediately we want some relief from that problem. At that time, self-realization is not in our priority list, is it? Self-realization is only, it will be like that. That is why all this demigod worship is also there in this world, because of this. That everyone is not ready to go back to spiritual world straight away. Oh, one day I got up in the morning, I read Bhagavad Gita, oh, I said, I have to go back home, back to God, and now I'm finished now here. Nobody does that, does they? Even after hearing 60, 70 years Bhagavad Gita, still you're not sure whether you want to go back home, back to God or not. So that's our condition. And our condition to be on, Vedavyas knows our psychology much better than us. He knows these are people who want everything. They want sahityam, they want literary abilities, they want beauty, they want wealth, they want a good wife, they want good children, they want everything, and they want liberation also at the end, after all that. These are the customaries of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, knowing very well what did Krishna, there he spoke was, what he said was, Sukadeva Goswami says to Parikshit this like this, that if you want this worship, him, if you want this worship, then at the end he said, akama sarvagamo va mokshagama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeda purushamparam. He says to Parikshit that akama, if one has no desire, one has no desire, that is very, very rare in this world, isn't it? Sarva kamova, we all belong to this category. We want everything in this world, isn't it? Akama sarva kamova. Then there's two categories. One who doesn't want anything. Another category who wants everything. Two categories. When these two categories were spoken, there came a third category. What's that category? Moksha kama udaradi. The Kumaras, they came up. Kumara says only liberation, nothing else. We don't want anything else otherwise. We want liberation. So they had a desire for liberation. So Sudeva Goswami told Parikshit, akama sarvagamova mokshagama udaradi. Whether you are free from desires, or you have all the desires, or you are desiring for liberation, tivrena bhakti yogena yajeda purusham param. With intense devotion, you should serve Krishna. Purusham Param, Supreme Personality Krishna. You should serve Him. And He will fulfill all this desire. But the way Krishna fulfills the desire, and the demigods fulfills the desire, is two different ways. That is also interesting to know. When the demigods fulfills the desire, say for example, you worship Lord Shiva with some desire for some desire for knowledge, because he is the authority on the knowledge side, isn't it? He will give you the knowledge, what you need. And Lord Shiva is easy to please also. He does that. Similarly, Sri Parvati gives you, if you want a good wife and a good family life, happy family life, Sri Parvati can give you that also, can worship that. But that is how they'll offer that and they'll fulfill your desire. Many people, they used to worship Sri Parvati and Shiva with all those desires also. But when it comes to Krishna, what happens is, what He does is, He takes away your desire. Then there is no trouble, isn't it? You can fulfill the problem, solve the problem in two different ways. Either He gives, fulfill the desire, or you take the desire away, then where is the problem? The problem is solved there, isn't it? The problem is also solved if He takes away your desire. Desire is something which is coming due to association with the modes of nature. Otherwise, what is to be desired in this world, strictly speaking? Is there anything to be desired? Because you know very well that at the end of the day, no matter how much you have desired, even if it comes, at the end you have to leave them and go. So that is the reality. That's not going to go with you. Nobody has taken anything from this world when they left. No one has taken anything. So when it is like that, that is the situation, that it is impossible to do anything, but desire is disturbing you. That desire is not going away. Unable to check that desire. Kamam. Isn't it? This is material desires. So Krishna's ways of relieving that is, He takes that desire away by giving the higher taste of Krishna consciousness. And when that taste of Krishna consciousness comes, then you start rejecting everything. Oh, it's all not worth struggling for in this world. That you will get firmly fixed up in that way, and that way you are released from that hassle of that desire. So, Krishna is saying here, those who are worshipping the demigods, if they have desire, they may be in the mode of goodness also. Satvigi Shraddha, there are people who worship Lord Shiva and also Sri Parvati and other demigods with these desires, different desires. Like the gopis worshipped Sri Parvati. Kartyayini Mahamaye Mahayogini Adishwari. That was a desire in them. It so happened that desire was their great fortune. That Krishna wanted to be their husband. They wanted Krishna to be their husband. So, but they approached Sri Parvati in that way. That Kartyayini Mahamaye Mahayogini Adishwari Nandagopa Sudam Devi Padime Kurde Nama. That is how they prayed to Sri Parvati. This is all a part of the Vedic culture. There is not something you can take it away from that. But when proper understanding comes, that all this is our headache, but that state of consciousness won't develop very easily. And Yaksharakshamsi Rajasi, Krishna says. What does Yaksharakshamsi Rajasi? Rakshasa is one. This is a very important point, because whom do we call a Rakshasa? Rakshasa, sometimes we call them demons, isn't it? But Rakshasa is, by definition, what it means is one who offers protection to others. Somebody says to someone else, look, I'll look after you, I'll protect you. He is called a Rakshasa. He is called a Rakshasa. Why is he called a Rakshasa? That one should know. Sometimes people say, oh, don't worry about anything, I'm there, I'll take care of you, I'll look after you. This is a Rakshasic nature. Reason being, as far as Krishna is concerned, nobody can look after anybody. Every single one of us are ready to be shot one day. When the death comes, isn't it? Krishna says there, Aghadam Niyamanasya Vadyasyavena Tushtida. Bhagavatam says like this. We are all like criminals who is going to be hung one day. Only there is a difference in the time when the execution is going to happen. And in this situation, one is promising to somebody else that I will look after you, I will protect you. Is there anything more foolish than that? That this is the foolishness Krishna is trying to bring it out from us. That any such person who offers protection to someone else, thinking that I will protect them, I will look after them, Krishna says he is a Rakshasa. Yaksharakshamsi. So those who worship Yaksharakshamsi Rajasa, those who are in the mood of passion, they will worship Rakshasas and Yakshas and such level of living entities in that category. They will be worshipped by the Rajasic nature. You can also see a lot of their activities are in that way, inclined. They will not give a come to the proper understanding of spiritual life. This is the first problem they have. They won't take spiritual life seriously. What they will take from spiritual life is this kind of things due to their Rajasic nature. They'll think that, oh, if I do all these things, I've done my bit. Now I have to move on to the next one, project, whatever I have in this world. And in this way, their mind is disturbed because it's not based on knowledge. It's not based on spiritual knowledge. Whereas, when one has understood in Sattva Gunam, Sattvagi Shraddha is there, it will not waver like that. He knows that nobody can protect anybody in this world. My duty is to surrender to Krishna and chant the holy name and take for shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. That conviction will come very firmly in the mind of the devotee. And that is what is the Shraddha, in the proper Shraddha. That is even beyond the three modes of material nature. So, demigod worship is concerned in the Sattvika Shraddha. Yakshas and Rakshasas in the Rajasik Shraddha. Now what does Krishna says? Krishna says, Prayadan Bodhaganam Shanye Yajande Tamasa Janaha. Tamasa Jana, the Tamasic nature people, what will they do? Do you know what they do? You can think about it yourself, sometimes you will notice this. Some people, they are very particular about Shraddha ceremony. And they are very particular about the, after person's death, how much time they spend in helping that soul. And every year they'll be very particular about their Shraddham and all the other activities. In other words, their tendency is to pull them back again to this world from wherever they are. And they feel, they take shelter of them. That, oh, my ancestors have done this And I must please the ancestors. If I don't do this, what will happen to my to me in this world? This is what is disturbing them. In other words, all their energy is not directed for spiritual knowledge or for or for serving Krishna. Not even for the demigods, rather to these Pretas and Buddhas and Pishajas. Whatever who has left this world, after the soul has left the body, only a very short time, the living entity in this world, so-called relatives and others can help that person. But they will give undue importance to that, this serving the ancestors. They'll give undue importance to that. And they will make a big feast for their Shraddha ceremony. And Bhagavatam says, Shraddham should never be performed in such an elaborate level. Shraddham kurya na vistare, Krishna says to Uddhava. Shraddham has to be performed in a very quiet way, in a very peaceful way, not in an elaborate scale. Why? Because that generates this feeling in a person that he thinks, he starts taking shelter of those who have departed from this world. You don't even know where they have gone, what body they have got next. But still that attachment to them is strongly in there. Instead of taking to Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and trying to serve Krishna peacefully in this world and to leave this world, rather they connect themselves with the other family members or who are their ancestors and start dragging on with, and think that this is all spiritual life. That is the sad part of it. That is the sad part of it. There's a lot of people like this in this world because of this misunderstanding. That is why Krishna is saying here that prayadan bhutaganam shanye yajande tamasa janaha. Tamasic nature in a person will dictate his mood of worship also. And the way he worships is like this, this ancestor worship. And that will go on in a very elaborate level. Vedic literature doesn't condemn it altogether. He says ancestors have to be served. But there is to be done not as the topmost priority in the life. Topmost priority is pleasing Krishna. That is the first thing. Without that, everything else is waste in this world. That's a very clear instruction. So this is what Shastra is telling us. And we, what we do, we bring all this garbage with us from our family relationships and this and that, and compare Shastra with that. And then think that, oh, Shastra is saying like this, but this is more important for me at this moment. I should go with my ashes to this river, that river, and float. But even if you may not have done all that, if you have served Krishna, you are above everything else. That is what the point. But you may have done all these things, but you have not served Krishna, then you have no spiritual life. You have not done what you are supposed to do in this life. This is the point Krishna is making. So, Sattvam, Rajas and Tamas will also dictate our method of process of worship in this world. Our mentality is always, because of our tamogunam inside, we try to associate closely with our ancestors and also to the Yasharashamsi Rajasa. That kind of worship will develop in a person's nature. But normally, with the enlightenment of Shastram, when we understand Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam properly, we will realize these things are insignificant as far as our spiritual life is concerned. Spiritual life is to please Krishna. That is more important than anything else. That conviction will come very firmly in a person. And then he has his worship is above the three modes of nature. Malsevayam to Nirgunam, Krishna says. Nirguna means above the three modes of nature. When one is serving Krishna, that is above the three modes of nature. But how many people do that in this world? How many people are able to do it? Very, very few, isn't it? So that shows the difficulty of reaching that state of consciousness also. So in this verse, basically Krishna is saying there that you will come to worship me or you will come to serve me only if you have come to that state of consciousness. Otherwise it is very, very difficult. Because why Krishna is saying like this is, Krishna likes devotees to come back to him. Not in the way what we do things. Therefore, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna spoke one important point. What was that? Udharet Atmana Atmanam. Everyone should elevate oneself. By his own effort, he should elevate. He should take the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam and elevate himself in spiritual life. This is what Krishna wants from us. Udharet Atmana Atmanam. Atmanam Avasadayel. Krishna doesn't like that you take help from anyone else. Like these ancestors and demigods and all that. Krishna says, It's not necessary if you have come to understand properly. Udharaid Atman Atmanam. Atmanam avasadeyel. Atmanyev Atmanav bandhu. Atmaiva ripu ratmana. Krishna says there, isn't it? If you remember that verse earlier. Udharaid Atman Atmanam. Krishna says to Arjuna, I like when they elevate themselves and come up in spiritually. Come up themselves. Atmanam avasadeyel. And Atmanyev Atmanav bandhu. For him, his mind is the friend. And in help him in his advancement in spiritual life. If he is not doing that, Ribiratmana, he is the enemy also. Krishna has spoken that beginning. From there you can see, Krishna's point is like this, that one should put all the effort what one can in the spiritual direction and elevate oneself spiritually, and that is what places Krishna. That's what places Krishna. And when we are unable to do that, we get distracted by various other things. Then, as far as Krishna is concerned, you are distracted from Shastram. You are not following the Shastram. So, again, Krishna stresses this point. Now, in the next two verses, Krishna is saying here something very important. Something very important. What are they? Ashastra vihidam ghoram tapyandeye tapojanaha dambha hangara samyuktaha kamaraga balanvidaha Karshayanda Sharirastam Budagrama Majedasa Mam Chaivanda Sharirastam Tanvidya Asuranishchayan. Now, these two verses, Krishna is saying that the mentality of such demonic people who engages in such things, what are they? Ashastra Vihidam Ghoram Tapyandeye Tabo Janaha. Those who have not studied Shastram, those who never took serious note of Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavadam, like that, ashastra vihidam ghoram, then they will engage in some kind of austerities and penances. That is sometimes very interesting. People engage in some kind of severe austerities, not based on shastram. And what do they do? Ashastra vihidam ghoram tapyandeye tapojanaha. They torture their body in their own way. They have their own shastram. They create their own shastram. And then they start torturing their own body. And Krishna says, Ashastra vihidam ghoram. Such kind of ghoram, very severe austerities, which are not based on shastram, is Krishna says is ashastram. Ashastram vihidam ghoram. Ashastram it is. It's not shastra. And it is not shastra vihidam. Ashastra vihidam. It is not based on shastram. And ghoram. It is very harsh. Harsh things they do. And it is frightening sometimes to people to see that. And it's also based on their ego and false ego, dambham and ahangaram. And also plenty of desires inside. It is not based on knowledge, you see. Sometimes in the Bhagavadam there are certain personalities to prove this to us. If you remember the story of Bhasmasura, he is also called, I think, Vyomasura there, who went to Lord Shiva, didn't he? He went to Lord Shiva. Remember the end of the 10th canto of that story? This personality, he was a real demon. Demon in the sense that his desire was he asked Sri Narada Maharshi, whom should I worship? Narada Maharshi told him that you should worship Lord Shiva because he is very easily pleased. He gives you all the benedictions very easily. That's the right thing to worship. So he got, knowing well his mind, nature of the mind, Srinath Maharshi knew what was going to happen to him before. That's why he was able to say that. So he said to this demon that worship Lord Shiva, he will fulfill your desire. He'll fulfill your desire. If you study Bhagavatam carefully, you will find a lot of interesting things there. These personalities will give us some hint how we should be careful in our worship also. And what happened to this personality was, he said, he went to Benares, because Lord Shiva's famous temple is in Benares, isn't it? Kashi Visheshwara he is called. So he goes there, and he saw there people were going to Ganga River, and they were bringing water in a pitcher, you know, the earthen pot. They're bringing water in that pitcher, bringing it and pouring into Lord Shiva's linga, Shiva lingam there, in that. He looked at them in a very contemptuous way. He says like this, what kind of worship is this? You're going to Ganga River, bringing some water and pouring into, owing unto Lord Shiva. And this is not proper worship of Lord Shiva. He's decided. He said, I'm going to worship him in the proper way. He says, Ashastra Vihidam Ghoram. If you want to see that, you just have to read that chapter in the Bhagavatam. What did he do? He says, he sets up a big fire sacrifice. A fire sacrifice, a sort of a, you know, a sacrificial arena he created. With bricks and all, he built it up. Set up the fire in that. And then he said, brought a first class knife with him. And he sat in front of that. And sitting there, he started with the knife, cut one piece of flesh, throw it into the fire. He said, if this doesn't please Lord Shiva, what will please him? I'm giving myself up to him. And started cutting pieces of flesh from his body and offering into the fire. He offers into the fire, and there was no, he was waiting, is Lord Shiva going to come, seeing my sincerity in my service? Because many people think if I am sincere in my service, what I am doing, I will be accepted. But what Krishna is saying is, your sincerity alone is not good enough. You have to follow Shastram also. Some people say, oh, I have done everything very sincerely. I have killed someone in spiritual life. That's also very sincerely I have done it. Based on Sadhu, Shastra and Guru, I have done that. So, but Krishna is saying something different. Krishna says that your sincerity is fine, but without Shastric understanding, if you do things, that sincerity has no value. This Asura, what he did was, he cut these pieces of flesh from all over his body, and 6 or 7 days he was doing this, sitting in front of the fire. Lord Shiva never appeared. At last he thought himself that there's only one option left now. If he doesn't want to appear, let me decide one way or the other. I'm going to offer myself to him. He held his head into the fire like this. He held. And then took this knife, kept it on his throat like this. Before I offer this, he chanted the mantra, what? Om Mrityunjaya Nama Mrityunjaya. Mrityunjaya is Lord Shiva's another name, one who releases you from death. So he chanted the mantra and everything, and he was going to cut his head and so that the head will fall into the fire. Such a way. Whole body is bleeding everywhere, the blood is falling. But the demon has not given up that mentality, and he was thinking that if this doesn't please him, let's see what's going to happen. Suddenly from the fire, Lord Shiva appeared, came out. And when he came out, the first question what this demon asked, you have decided to come now, have you? This was his first question to him. Lord Shiva, can you imagine if you get a disciple like this, what will happen to the spiritual master's fate? The disciple says, that you have decided to come now, very good, he says. He says, Lord Shiva says, why are you doing all these things? He said, do you know that I get easily pleased? I don't need all these things. The demon says to him, you may have such useless disciples who will bring a bucket of water and offer you their worship, but I am not, don't belong to that category. Already he has put himself up above everybody else. And he wanted to make Lord Shiva realize that he is a special disciple category. So he says like this to Shiva. Shiva thought, this is the first disciple I've got, one like this. It's a good thing. Let me teach him a lesson properly. He also decided. So, at that point, this demon says to him, first what Shiva did was, he got rid of all that problems with the body. Got his body back to its normal shape. He was pleased with that. Then, when he got his health back, because after all, for Lord Shiva to do that is not a difficult thing. He got his body back into order. Then he said to him, why did you call me? What do you want from me? He says, this demon had no idea in his mind what he wanted. Everything. He was thinking, at the same time, Sri Parvati was with Lord Shiva. When he saw this situation, he says to Lord Shiva, that yasi yasataram shirshni, whomever, wherever I put my hand and whoever his head, immediately he should become, turn into ashes, he said. He should die immediately and turn into ashes. Yasi yasakaram murdhi, wherever I put my hand, that whoever it should burn into ashes. So Shiva says to him, why do you ask such severe boons. Nobody asks such things normally. They ask for some different material. He says, I don't want any such thing. This is all what I want. If you want to give it to me, give it to me. If you don't want to give it to me, you can do what you like. This was the answer from the disciple. So Lord Shiva said to himself that this fellow is not a very easy character to deal with. He need to learn in his own way, in the right way. So he decided, Lord Shiva says, all right, if he insists like that, I'll give you that I will give you that boon, but be careful while using it. He said, you shouldn't use it indiscriminately or anything. As soon as he got the boon, first thing, he said, I want to test it on you, he says to Lord Shiva. He says, I want to test on you. Lord Shiva pulled back a little bit and says to him, that why you don't trust my words? This boon is there for you to use it. But if you do this to me, what will happen to Sri Parvati? She will be without a husband. What will happen to her? The demon laughs and says to Shiva, why you worry about her? I am there to look after her. This was his answer to Lord Shiva. At the very moment, Sri Parvati disappeared from the scene. And Shiva decided, I have to take him to the right place now. This is not the place, we'll sort this out. Shiva started running, followed by our great person, this Asura. They are running, ran everywhere. Ultimately, Shiva took him to Vaikuntham, to Krishna. Krishna was there. He was there like a brahmachari. And what did he do? He knew all what was going on between Shiva and this great disciple. So Shiva was bringing him there. As soon as he entered Vaikuntham and walked through, followed by our demon, our brahmachari stopped him there. Krishna was like there, a brahmachari. He says to him, what are you running for? He says. So this man says to him, this demon says to Krishna, did you see Shiva running this way? Krishna says, yes, he just ran away this way. I'm following him. For what? He said. He said, no, he has given me a boon. And I wanted to test it on him. And I was chasing him, but he has been always escaping from me. I want to get him here, he said. Krishna says to him, how foolish you are, Krishna says, how foolish are you? Has ever any boon Krishna has given has worked? This was the question from Shiva has given, has worked? Krishna says, any time in the past, when Shiva has given a boon, has it worked? He says, you are foolishly running after him. I am telling you it's not going to work. You are wasting your time. He has cheated you. Krishna's answer to this demon. Demon said, then I have to get him to take a revenge, he says. You are not going to get him. He has escaped from you. You can see, I can tell you, he said, you are not going to make it. If you want, you can try this on yourself. It's not going to work, he said. So at that time, this Asura says, the demon says to Krishna, that if I die, what will happen? If I put it on the head and all. I told you, Krishna kept insisting, it's not going to work. Now, instead of putting the whole head on your head like the own hand, you don't have to put the whole hand, just put one finger like this and see what happens. Maybe maximum you may get a shock, that's all. Nothing more than that, Krishna says. So the demon says, alright, let me test it out. He just puts his finger and the whole body got burned into ashes. Now from this, what do we learn? You got the best spiritual master, who? Sri Narada Maharshi. You got to Vaikuntham by Lord Shiva's... You got to see Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva took him to Vaikuntham. And then what happened? You have to come back here again after that. Isn't it? So, those people who have that kind of mentality and continue spiritual life in this world, in that way, that is their destination, what is discussed in these verses. Ashastra vihidam khoram tapyandeye tapo janaha damba ahangara samyuktaha kamaraga belanvidaha. Kamam and ragam, due to the strong material desires and material attachment, it is driving them to perform their austerities and penances. And the result of that will be like this, what is discussed in the Bhagavadam. Now, in the same Bhagavadam, you will see, immediately after this story, there is another devotee story in the next chapter. Who is that? Arjuna. Arjuna's story in the Bhagavatam. You can read that also. So two personalities, that this person, because his samskar was not there, he didn't have the culture in him. So even after worship, getting the best spiritual master, worshipping Lord Shiva, and even after Vaikuntham, he fell off. Why? The culture wasn't there inside. On the other hand, in the next story, you will see, Vedavyasa has put very next chapter itself, the story of another great devotee, Arjuna. He did not worship Krishna at that time. He worshipped Lord Shiva. But in spite of that, Krishna came to rescue him, even at the greatest crisis in his life. That story is a detailed story. Won't have so much time. That story, if you read that. So these two stories in the Bhagavatam is pointing out to us that if a person has the right culture inside, spiritual culture in a person, even if he worships anyone, still he will eventually get back to Krishna. But on the other hand, if with a demoniac nature, even if we worship anyone in this world, eventually we will fall from our goal. Ultimately we'll fall back into our... So that purification, manashuddhi, is important. And that is where devotion comes. When pure devotion builds up inside, that purification comes inside. The natural purity will also happen in a person's mind. And the result will be that he will be able to serve Krishna in the proper way. So in these verses in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is telling us, Ashastra Vihidam Ghoram, anyone who flouts, who blocks the instructions of Bhagavad Gita, Tapendeye Tabo Janaha, and performs austerities and penances, Dambam Ahangara Samyuktam, and Kamaraga Belanyudaha, Kamam Ragam, that is the forces that is behind it, Karshayamna Sharirastam, Budagramama Jedasaha, Mam Chaivanda Sharirastam, Tan Vidya Asuranishchayan. Another important verse is, Karshayanda Sharirastam. What he does is, he exposes his body into torture. He tortures his body in different ways. And then, Bhudagrama Majedasaha, Mam Chaivanda Sharirastam. Then, he forgets that I am situated within him. It's me who is present inside him, isn't it? Mam Chaivanda Sharirastam, Tan Vidya Asuranishchayan. He forgets the factor that he is torturing me, who is situated within himself. That is what he is doing. He is torturing me. And Krishna is saying like that, that kind of worship is dangerous. That kind of worship is dangerous. Sometimes you see people like that. They engage in all sorts of activities in the name of spiritual life. And that will also is not the right thing to do. That this kind of austerities are frightening to those. And also... also, it is coming from false ego and pride. That is the call, and that is also the demonic nature. Only when the mode of passion builds up, one can do such things. And they even torture the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is situated within themselves. Even they know about it, they will not go away from that. And again, they are continuously torture Krishna within their own body. And tolerating heat and cold, hunger and thirst, in different ways, they will perform different offerings, and this is all asuric nature. And when they start their worship, also, austerities and penances, at that time itself, the mind is absorbed in impure thoughts and impure intentions. And what they want from performance of penances is not purity of the mind. That's not what they are looking for. But on the other hand, that they want something to achieve in this world, like Hiranyakashipu did and so many others. And they also will think, oh, we are very powerful spiritual personalities. And they will not accept any instructions from the Shastram. Whatever that comes to their mind, they will accept that as the authority. And if anyone says anything against that, they will consider them as the fault finders. That is the greatness of this stupidity. And this is also the nature of the asuric nature. Asuric nature. So, this is the nature of the asuric people. Krishna is explaining these two verses. How the asuric people, even in their worship, they bring that asuric nature into their worship also. They will not take the instructions of the Shastram and follow the Shastram rigorously. All this has been spoken only from this point of view to tell us that Ashastra Vihidam Ghoram, that whatever you perform without consultation of the Shastram, that Ashastra Vidam Varam Tapendeya Tavo Janaha, that you are only torturing yourself, and that is torturing Krishna also. Because Krishna is present within us as the part and parcel, isn't it? So, in these verses, Krishna also, there are many instances in the Ramayanam also to point out such worships. And in one instance, there is a story, Ramachandra killing a Shudra. I don't know whether you have read that in the Ramayanam. It's a very famous, a Shudra goes to forest and performs penances, performs severe penances. Ramachandra goes and kills him. And people ask the question, why did Ramachandra do that? This question came up. Why Ramachandra did such a thing, which was not proper? After all, he was performing penances, so he should be accepted. The reason for that was, the Shudra's mind was not, Shudra, Brahmana and all that, based on the consciousness, you have to know that. That his consciousness was not pure. And because he was performing such penances, I think his name was Jambuga, that's the name of the Shudra, mentioned in the Ramayana. That he performed such penances, very severe penances, Ramachandra killed him. Told him, this is not proper. Because the purity was not there in the mind. So when someone performs such penances without sufficient purity inside, that has to be rectified. And Ramachandra did exactly that. And that is why that is to be understood in that way. So, similarly, we go continue this, there is more, you know, from now on, what Krishna talks about is, this Shraddha, how that branches off into different things. In our charity, in our penances, and in also, in our penances, all these things, and also the kind of food what we eat. All these things are from now on, in the rest of this chapter. So I'll stop there now. We'll continue next Sunday. We have to leave this room as soon as possible because there's another group waiting for their programs. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.